It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Samsung loses, Apple wins, or is it the other way around? We've got the experts. We'll talk about Samsung versus Apple and all the tech news next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 368, recorded August 26th, 2012. The Zombie Slayer. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToAssist from Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today at GoToAssist.com. Use a promo code TWiT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth with a 30-day free quote at gazelle.com. And by Ford. Ford invites tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. And by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs with automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT8. It's time for This Week in Tech, TWiT, as it's known colloquially around the geekosphere. Leo Laporte here, and joining us to talk about the week's tech news, Adam Curry from No Agenda, noagendashow.com.
Howdy, y'all.
What are those the most scary words you'll ever hear? I'm here from No Agenda, and I'm ready to help.
And we're here to help.
We're here to help.
That's right. That would be your government, Leo.
Oh, yeah, them. Yes. Adam is ready with his rain stick, so everybody be nice. Also here with us from New York and The Verge, Nilay Patel. Nilay is an attorney, but also one of the great writers at The Verge, one of the founding editors at The Verge, and been covering the Samsung-Apple trial. We'll be talking about that and using his expertise because he's also a lawyer.
Yeah, it's funny. That piece of paper comes in handy all the time.
You don't practice, though, right?
No, I haven't practiced in years.
But you passed the bar.
I did. I'm on a bar in Wisconsin and Illinois.
So you could if you wanted to.
I could, but I definitely don't want to.
I don't blame
you. Doing other people's paperwork is not fun. covering the trial is fun, but actually being part of it, not fun at all.
Well, and having some expertise in the law, because, you know, what sometimes seems like common sense to us unwashed lay people is really is not how it works at all.
No, it's nonsensical, especially when it comes to this patent stuff. It's pretty nonsensical.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, good. We'll get into that in a moment. Also, with his father, Robert Ballister, so we can get the Holy Ghost involved.
Yes, I am a Catholic priest, but also like Nilay, I no longer practice.
He's got it down. He doesn't have to practice anymore. But I've been told if I should pass away during the show, you can perform extreme unction.
I got you.
You got me.
I got you back.
So actually, the top story, we'll lead off with a story that is not Apple Samsung. Shocking to everybody. Yesterday, Neil Armstrong passed away, the first person to walk on the moon at the age of 82. Adam, do you actually believe that he walked on the moon? I just should check probably before we talk about this.
Well, I have to be honest that I do not believe that he walked on the moon.
I guess I was right
during that landing.
Good call.
Okay. I hate to say it, and unfortunately, he took the secrets of that with him to his grave.
Well, Buzz Aldrin's nice still alive.
That NBC.com posted a story where they said first guy to walk on the moon, Neil Young, passed away.
They were the first with the story, and I guess sometimes typos happen.
Yeah. And these people make a lot of money to do that.
Wow.
I had a lot of – I was out at a bar yesterday, and I heard a lot of people wondering if it was Lance Armstrong who'd passed away. There was a lot of confusion. Really, really depressing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the good news is I'm sure there'll be quite a few documentaries and, people will be talking quite a bit about it. And I think as we begin our exploration of Mars, it's really good to remember back to Neil Armstrong and those first words.
Yeah, that's another one I really don't believe in, Leo. You know, if you put a picture of what the Curiosity Mars rover has taken, which always seems to take pictures of itself, you put a picture of that into Google, the Google API will say, would you like to see other pictures from New Mexico?
Well, it looks a lot like New Mexico. All uh-huh. right. Admittedly, yeah. admittedly.
Okay. Well, now, regardless of whether or not you think we landed on the moon or the Curiosity landed on Mars, you have to admit that the effect of inspiring a whole generation of scientists and people interested in space, that's a good thing, right? I mean, even with all the other
doubts. I wouldn't say Adam has to admit anything, but let's ask him.
Well, no, it's nice to get people's imagination rolling, and I liked all the 3D renderings that we saw of the sky crane and the parachute and the landing. Of course, we never really saw any of that. We just saw the 3D renderings. They were beautiful. Well done. The 7 minutes of terror. I'm impressed.
You really don't believe? What would be the incentive for the government to... or NASA to fake this?
Oh, just more money.
It's a tiny bit of money compared to, you know, air conditioning the troops in Afghanistan, for instance. I mean, really, it's a few
yeah,
billion
you can
dollars
look at it that way. I've put a lot of work into the moon landing, and you know, there's just a lot of different theories about how that would work if you can get through certain parts of space to actually get out that far. I'm just not wholly convinced. People call me a crackpot, so be it. I have to really keep to my guns on this one. I'm really just not completely convinced.
I am dragging pictures from Curiosity, and I'm not getting New Mexico yet, but I'll keep doing it.
Now, Adam, let me get your input on this one. I got accosted by a few YouTube users who are trying to convince me that the Mars we see in the sky is actually just a big inflatable place there by the government, so we don't actually know where Mars is.
No. I'm not on that tip. I actually knew that there are bases on the moon and on Mars, not necessarily ours. And who knows what the ultimate agenda is? You can Google Project Bluebeam. That may be one. There's a number of different theories out there. So it's hard for me if I haven't seen it with my own eyes. I have a hard time believing things.
I can respect that. I choose to believe it because I think it's cool. I think it's cool that we walked on the moon. I think it's cool we landed a rover with a huge, complex sky crane thing that ditched itself into the recycle bin. But I totally understand. I mean, it's if you actually broke it down and considered all the technical achievements that needed to be made to get us to the moon and back, to get a rover to Mars, it really could be considered science fiction even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, what bugs me then is now we have these. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Neil.
I was just saying, I saw a tweet from somebody that said it took 66 years from the Wright brothers, you know, flying at Kitty Hawk to Neil Armstrong walking
on
the
moon. Isn't that
amazing? Which is no time at all.
Yeah. Well, it's depressing, of course, is if you think about it, it was 46 years ago that he walked on the moon.
And we haven't been back.
Yeah. So pretty soon that number is going to even be more significant. All right, well, we'll move on. We'll agree to disagree, Adam.
No, that's cool. But what is interesting, though, in all the reports, there is actually almost no picture of Neil Armstrong walking on the moon. He took most of the footage, if you would believe that he was there. It's all Buzz Aldrin.
Right.
There's, I think, one picture of Neil's butt, where kind of like a half shot. And then there's one from some top shot, but all these pictures of, you know, the guy in the spacesuit and the dark sky behind him, that's all Buzz Aldrin. None of that is Neil Armstrong.
Well, you know, it sometimes happens that Neil was the shutter bug and Buzz just, you know, Buzz
right,
was having
it's
fun.
It's astounding to see how many news reports show that picture of Buzz Aldrin.
Right. Well, I don't know what to make of that. Let's talk about Apple versus Samsung. Maybe we can... do you believe there is a product called the iPhone, Adam Curry?
You know, okay, so you can make fun of me, Leo. I'm actually very jealous of Niall because I would love to be a lawyer, and I looked into it. I thought maybe at an older age I could still do this, but that's a lot of work. You got like 7 years and you have to do apprenticeships.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a drag. And, you know, ultimately, it's a pretty dull job.
I mean, I went to law school at the University of Wisconsin. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, party. So just for those of us,
it was a good time.
Those of you who did not know this, shockingly, we were preparing for live coverage of the Apple Samsung verdict sometime later this month, maybe in September. Shockingly, the jury came back after mere 3 days of deliberation on, there was almost three weeks worth of trial. 109-page jury instruction from the judge, a 20-page, 33-question verdict document. And apparently the jury just went into the jury room and said, guilty, 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 check, check, check. What do you think it's worth? I don't know, billion, and came back. Neil, were you surprised how fast the jury came back with that verdict?
I was very surprised. I thought it would be this next week. I thought it would be the 31st, I think.
They obviously wanted the weekend off.
I think what they talked about, and, you know, the jury has now talked a little bit to the Wall Street Journal, to CNET, to some other people. I think what they did was they asked themselves, we're going to answer these 700 individual, more than 700 individual decisions they had to make in these 33 groups. But, they're not lawyers, and the jury is not supposed to be lawyers. I think they asked themselves not, let's answer these technical questions, but did Samsung copy Apple? And once we make that decision, and once we decide that Apple's patents are valid, then it's really easy to fill out the form, right? Then you can say, well, does this phone have bounce back scrolling? Which is one of the Apple patents. Yes. So you just mark yes. And, then it's easy to pick up 28 devices and say, does it have it? You could do that in 15 minutes. So I think they spent their 2 days arguing about that. That seems to be what they did. The first day and a half or so, they argued, did the prior art that Samsung show invalidate the patents? Okay. Does the evidence show that Samsung deliberately tried to copy Apple? Yeah. You know, so Apple did a good job of presenting that evidence.
In particular, they were convinced by the emails from Samsung executives saying, we've got a crisis in design. We've got to respond to the iPhone. I mean, that was damning evidence.
Yeah. And I was always, there's a lot of Samsung's response to that was, this is what every company does. But they never produced the document from Apple saying we have to respond to Samsung. So, the jury looked, they did their job, right? They looked at the evidence as lay people on a jury. It's a jury of your peers, and the peers are just the people from the community. And they said, this is the evidence we looked at. We made these decisions, and we're going to check the boxes. I think they got a little – I think once they decided that Apple had won, they blew through Samsung's case against Apple pretty quickly. So they ruled that Apple didn't infringe any of Samsung's patents, which to me is a little – some of Samsung's patents are about how you connect to 3G networks, and Apple's phones clearly connect to 3G networks. So – unless you're like an electrical engineer or something, I don't know how you make that. It's A to B in logic. So I don't know. They didn't answer the antitrust questions, the other stuff that was presented to them. I think they said Apple won. We're going to tick the form. And then they said Samsung lost. And so Samsung lost its entire case. The one big victory Samsung had, and I think this is a little kind of underreported, is that none of its tablets were held to infringe the iPad design stuff. Right. So Samsung has been saying you can't patent a black rectangle. You can't have exclusive ownership of this black rectangle device. It's ridiculous that you're saying the iPad is the de facto black rectangle. And the jury agreed with them. Right. They said these Samsung tablets that look a lot like the iPad don't infringe on this design patent. And I think that is ultimately a big victory for Samsung. It's comes next to it. And, they won that battle. They lost the war, but they did win that battle.
But did the jury do its job? Because we found out that almost immediately they reduced the amount of the awards because the jury had awarded damages for devices that they had determined were not infringing.
The tablet, in fact.
Well, yeah, a tablet, right. And a few of the phones. So they had to go back and say, we awarded $100,000 for this and $1 million for this. Oh, and we had ruled that it wasn't infringing. So it seems as if maybe they made the unconscious decision that, yes, Samsung did infringe, and then they just went down and forgot which phones they had agreed to penalize.
Can I offer an opinion here?
Sure.
As we've established, I'm not a lawyer. I have been sued under the Lanham Act And to my understanding, this was initially a case of trade dress, which is a part of the Lanham Act. Yep. And correct me if I'm wrong, obviously. So under the Lanham Act, the entire idea is if the consumer can become, if the consumer can reasonably become confused by the product, service, et cetera, that may or may not be infringing, then that pretty much clears it up for everything. And it was much less under really specific patent law, but they looked at the iPhone with the bezel around it, the original iPhone from 2007, then looked at the, what is it, the 2000?
The Galaxy S, I think, was the one.
Galaxy S, which had the bezel, except for the name when it's not on, but even when it was on with the icons, which I believe Apple doesn't have a patent for.
Let me stop you. So, yeah. So the Apple does have a design patent on the grid of icons. That was, they called in Susan Kerr, who designed the original Mac icons. Uh-huh. Who now
works not the rounded icons, or it is for the icons?
It's for the grid of icons. Actually, at mm-hmm. this point, I know the patent numbers off the top of my head. It's the D305 patent. Is the design patent on the grid of icons on the iPhone's home screen. So Apple presented this huge case, this monster case. It was trade dress, like you're saying. It was a collection of design patents, three or four design patents, and then three iOS software patents on pinched. No, it's not pinch to zoom exactly. It's knowing the difference between tap. Scrolling and pinching,
yeah.
tap to zoom, and bounce back scrolling. So it's this monster case. So you're right. There's this whole big trade dress stuff, and the specific thing the jury had to decide was not does this infringe the trade dress? Are consumers likely to be confused? But does this dilute the distinctiveness of Apple's trade dress? So the value of the iPhone, Apple's saying the value of our brand and the iPhone look is people know it. They see this product. They know it's an iPhone from Apple. Now, Samsung mm-hmm. flooded the market with all these other products. Does that dilute the distinctiveness of our design? And the two big factors, you know, Apple... the two main factors that the case focused on was Samsung's intent to copy the design and actual confusion. And so Apple leaned hard, obviously, on intent to copy. They showed all these documents. Samsung leaned hard on you cannot tell me anyone's actually being confused in the market. And I think that
I think there's something to be said for both ways.
Yeah, there's five or six factors, and those are the two mm-hmm. that were kind of most at play in the case. And I think ultimately the jury decided that intent to copy trumped actual confusion. Right?
Now, so that's precedenting. That's precedence there, is it not?
No, I mean, those are the factors. So if this gets appealed and all this stuff, then it will become precedent. But for now, it's just a very powerful jury verdict that Apple can point to. It's not quite the law.
Neelai, what was the name of the icon expert that Apple brought in?
Susan Kerr.
She said that she was waiting in the waiting room, and she had this phone and this phone, an iPhone 4S and a Nexus next to each other, and she accidentally reached for the Nexus because they look so alike. Are you kidding me?
They do look somewhat alike.
Well, they're both ovals.
Yeah.
One's a lot bigger. Seriously, I mean, this is the thing I can't get over.
This goes back to the iPhone, the original iPhone, not the 4.
The 3GS Samsung Galaxy S.
Wait, hold on. You're holding, those are different phones. You've got an iPhone 4 and a Galaxy Nexus.
Right. Well, this is one of the phones that actually did fall under. This is the 2, the G2. This actually was in the list of...
But it was
of,
the 3GS that they said it confused.
Right. I mean, come on. Yeah. You're going to confuse this for 3GS?
Which phone is that?
This is the Galaxy 2. This is the T-Mobile T989.
That's the Vibrant.
Pretty similar.
Yes. That phone, I believe that phone, the Vibrant and the Fascinate on Verizon, were deliberately engineered to look as much like the iPhone as possible. Maybe not even at Samsung's behest, but... I think the carriers knew they didn't have an iPhone and they needed something to compete. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that there is, again, you know, one of the big factors is intent to copy, right? And I think there was a huge intent to copy to say to consumers, this thing is an iPhone. It's just as good as an iPhone.
Pamela Jones.
I totally agree on that.
Pamela Jones, writing in Grok Law, said that this $2 million error where the jury awarded Apple $2 million for inducement on a patent that they, in fact, had determined that was not infringing is going to undercut the jury's decision. And she says, this is why I don't think the jury's ruling will stand. Do you agree, Neelai, that this could, at least on maybe on appeal, I don't think Judge Koh's going to overturn the verdict, But on appeal, this could be a problem.
We're going to see a flurry of motions now. I mean, Samsung has to decide what places to attack, and the appeals court will decide what arguments to hear. So we'll see how that shakes out. But, you know, a lot of this criticism of the jury is lawyers who are mad. And Pamela's great. I'm not saying that this is, you know, her criticism is valid and they did make some mistakes. But there's a lot of lawyers who are mad that the jury isn't lawyers. Right.
Right.
Because these arguments are fascinating. And I have now, you know, spent a month dissecting them in detail because to me, there's all this legal rambling and interpretation to do. But the jury isn't lawyers. Their job is not to be lawyers. Their job is to say, here are the facts and evidence that were presented to us, and we're going to decide what happened. And so, yeah, they made some mistakes. You know, the judge, that this is the reason the judge had them read it, and then she reviewed it and sent them back because she knew, she anticipated that they would make some mistakes. And particularly when it comes to damages, it's nine people in a room who have no training in this stuff.
Well, especially given how fast they worked, you might think that they just kind of made up those numbers. Aren't the damages supposed to be not punitive but reflect the actual commercial costs to Apple of Samsung's infringement?
Yeah,
that's a hard thing to determine, and certainly not in 3 days.
Yeah, it's a combination of what the reasonable royalties Samsung would have paid if they'd licensed the patents, plus Apple's lost sales, plus all this stuff. And, you know, they heard from just a variety of competing experts, right? We're gonna pay for some accountants to stand in front of you and present some paperwork to you and say a bunch of numbers. And now pick who you think is right. I think what they did was they looked at Apple's sheet. They decided Apple won. They looked at Apple's sheet of numbers, and then they cut most of them down, right, to get to whatever their final number
was. Because Apple was asking $2.5 billion. They got a little more than $1 billion.
Now, I love that we're now at a place for $50.
It's no big deal. And the judge could, by the way, because it's punitive, could triple these damages, right?
Yeah, so it's willful infringement. So the jury decided that Samsung had willfully infringed the patents. And, you know, the elements of willful infringement, we've been talking about it at The Verge a little bit. The elements are, one of the big elements is how the Samsung's legal team did, right? Did they basically waste the court's time? You can punish Samsung for willful infringement if basically the goal is to make people settle, right? So if the jury finds willful and the judge is mad at the lawyers for pushing a case forward that they should have settled, she can't. And in this case, you know, we've been saying the judge has really wanted Samsung and Apple to settle. So right. We'll see how she lands. She could triple the damages. That's the maximum. I don't think she'll triple it. I think she will adjust the damage number a little bit.
Up with these types of multi-billion dollar lawsuits and awards, why aren't we seeing this in other industries like the fashion industry or the automotive industry if it really is about initially design patents?
All the time, every industry. You know, it's underreported, right, because it's not as sexy. But anytime there's a major breakthrough or a major set of innovations, there is a lot of shakeout of
like a sneaker?
Yeah, you know, the sneaker companies all sue each other. The car companies all sue each other for trade dress.
So this is going on all the time. We just don't know about it.
Yeah, pharmaceutical companies sue each other, right? Yeah.
Let me ask, Adam, what do you think? Do you think that Apple lost money because people thought they were buying an iPhone when they were buying a Samsung phone? Do you think people really were confused?
Yeah, how much money they lost, I don't know. But to me, I think that that the judgment is correct. I mean, how you calculate the award is another thing. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. And even thinking back to I was in London and someone actually sent me an iPhone because you couldn't get them. It was like a year later, I believe, before you could get it in Europe.
Right.
And there was a huge trade actually in iPhones in those early days, unlocked, etc. And I remember kind of the marketing, even if you walked into, we had these mobile phone stores in the UK, be like, oh, mate, well, this is just like it. Look at this one. This is beautiful. This is good.
Samsung's not responsible for how the salespeople do it, but they were saying, hey, it's the same. It's the same.
Ergo, consumers were, possibly confused or duped, or it is just as good as, or is just like the iPhone.
Right.
Yeah. You can't make that argument unless you have something that you can't say this is just like an iPhone and then show somebody like a kangaroo, you know, like
that would be a different accent.
You've got to show them. Yeah, it would be a different accent. You've got to show them something that reasonably is like the iPhone. And this is what I'm saying. I think particularly with some of these phones, the Verizon Fastnet to me is the the example of Verizon didn't have the iPhone. They needed to compete with AT&T and the iPhone. They got Samsung to make their phone look as much like the iPhone as possible. Samsung got dinged for it. I think Samsung has come a long way. I think they're not doing it anymore, right? The Galaxy S3 doesn't look anything like an iPhone. So in many ways, it's like, I don't think we're going to see this level of activity again. I don't think Apple's ever going to have it as good. That's what Matt McCary on our team, who is a patent attorney, has been saying. Apple's never, this perfect storm of events for Apple is never going to occur, where Samsung is actually copying the iPhone's design. They're actually in stores saying to consumers, buy this, it's just as good as. The phones look just the same. The software features are just the same.
And what's hilarious is that when people see my Galaxy Note, they all say, what's that, an iPad? I mean, it's crazy.
It's so confusing. I'm confused.
It is.
Actually, I think that this is a perfect example of the fact that Samsung has now moved on. I mean, the Note is clearly not an iPhone copy. I mean, it's huge. It's 5.3 inches, and the iPhone's 3.5 inches. Anything, now Apple might copy Samsung. I thought the most interesting take on this was Farhad Manjoo writing in Pando Daily, saying that, in fact, this was a business decision on the part of Samsung. That when the iPhone came out, he said, actually, the real crux of it was in the fall of 2008, when Apple became the most profitable phone manufacturer in the world. They'd only sold 4 million iPhones. They'd made $1.3 billion compared to number two, Nokia, which sold 113 million phones and only made $1.2 billion. And when that flipped, when Apple's iPhone became that profitable, companies had to say, this is it. We've got, you know, we have three choices. And he gives you the three choices. One was do nothing. He says a lot of firms opted for this path. Nokia and RIM, for instance, seem to have decided that the iPhone was a blip, a cultish device that would never reach mass appeal. So why bothering taking it on? Yeah, obviously that doesn't work. RIM is practically out of business and Nokia is struggling, now becoming a Windows phone company. He says another option was try to leapfrog Apple. You could spend many months, maybe even years, working on devices that aimed not just to match the iPhone's innovations, but to beat them. That's what Palm did with the Pre. Yeah, how'd that work out? And that's what Microsoft did. And 3 years later, Microsoft Phone ships and is, in fact, innovative, clever, but it's 3 years late, right? He says then there was a third choice. You could just copy Apple. You could borrow the iPhone's key ideas, make a half-hearted attempt to dress them up in your own brand, and bake them into your product line. And he says, in effect, this was a business decision. Samsung probably expected down the line they'd be paying a fine to Apple. They'd be compelled to license. Maybe they'd be compelled to change the design or the technology. But for the time being, that was a risk they were willing to take. And maybe that $1 billion or $3 billion fine is just the cost of doing business. They have, in fact, made $21 billion since then on their phones. So
yeah, but you know, Farhad's great. I mean, that's a great
I think this
piece.
Is a really good take on it. He might be right.
But there are some huge clutch omissions from this piece, which is that copying Apple didn't work out so great for a whole host of other companies, right? So,
well, if you're going to copy, you have to do a good job.
HTC does a great job of making its own phones, right?
Yeah, and they're not doing so well. Why not?
They're doing really poorly. Dell tried to make phones that ran Android that looked a lot like the... completely failed. Sony struggling for years to compete using Android. Samsung is a unique company. I don't think the lesson here is copying works. I think the lesson here is a little bit more subtle. It's Samsung had the resources because they're this dominant manufacturer, and they were given this gift of Android from Google, right? And they were able to put it together and immediately start mass producing copies of the iPhone, or devices that were substitutes for the iPhone in many ways and for many customers. That is a hugely unique situation. Right. And so they were able to make that business decision. But all these other companies, you know, LG makes a lot of stuff, right? Their phones are not as good and the customers don't want them. And they're, you know, the joke for me is always Samsung copied Apple and LG's sitting there desperately trying to copy Samsung. It's not as good. It's generational loss, right, of signal. It's really weird.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it right. And I mean, you can't copy, you have to steal. I remember there was someone in the Silicon Valley who used to say that. And I think his company has done pretty well.
His name was Steve Jobs.
Well, you know, the thing about that quote, and I think what there's a subtlety to that quote too, right? It's great artist or good artist copy, great artist steal. What you steal is not the idea. You steal the inspiration. You steal the essence. You steal the spirit of that problem, that solution, and you make it your own. That's what stealing really means in that case, right? They didn't steal the Xerox user interface. They didn't copy it and ship it. They said, these are the ideas that we want. We're going to steal the entire spirit of this product. We're going to do whatever we want to it and make it our own.
But
copying works.
Didn't they? Because, I mean, the spirit of the iPhone was it made all other phones look boring. It made them look so blah. It made them all look like the same functionless squares. Mm-hmm. In a way, Samsung's done that to Apple. I mean, yeah, okay, iPhones still sell by the millions. There's no doubt that they're making a mint off of them. But you look at them, what are the really exciting phones out there? It's not the iPhone 5 because, well, okay, it's going to be a bit bigger. It's going to have all the same functionality. Wow. It's the next Note. It's the next Galaxy. They're really sexy phones, and they do things that you can't do with iPhones. That's stealing the spirit of what Apple had. Yeah.
I agree. I think Samsung got there. I think they're there now. I think they have learned their lesson. I think in many places their execution can struggle, but they understand what the task in front of them is. What I'm saying is that just saying copying works as a business decision is I think it's there's a forest and trees metaphor here.
It's more than just copying, and there's the right company.
It's way more subtle, right? All of these companies, it's Android had to exist for Samsung to pull this off.
Right.
And without Android, it couldn't be done.
Which begs the next question. Why didn't Apple sue Google?
I don't know. I've been asking that question for a long time. And right now they're technically in some litigation with Google.
Actually, Google's suing them. Motorola's suing them.
Right, through Motorola. We'll see how that shakes out. But, I think Apple ultimately was most angry not about Android. This case is not about just Android.
Boy, you wouldn't think that reading Steve Jobs' quotes in the Isaacson biography, though.
Well, yeah, maybe this was just a Steve Jobs legacy thing that had to happen.
Well, Jobs said, though, that we're going thermonuclear war against Google, not Samsung. He said Google copied us. Google ripped us off.
Right, but it's the Samsung products, right, that actually ship and get sold and are the competitive threats. I think ultimately Apple and Google have to license it out. They have to stop this. Apple has a lot of money and they can afford the lawyers, but they're still got to pay for the lawyers. And you can't be Tim Cook and say, all right, we're going to spend $100 million a year on lawyers. Like, that's a lot of employees. That's a lot of talent. That's a lot of development, right? And, they have a really great deal with Microsoft. They have a patent cross license that says we won't clone each other's products. I think they can get there with Google. And if this is the sort of victory that they need.
Maybe this is the catalyst, you think, to a deal?
To walk into a meeting and say, look, Google,
you're next.
It's time to just pay. It's time to make this happen. We'll see if it happens.
Supposedly, Apple said to Samsung, $30 a phone. Is that accurate? You think?
I think that was their opening. We have a lot of slides. And this is another, sort of thing that's underreported about this case is, there's all this Steve Jobs trash talk in the past.
Yeah.
But the Apple is the most valuable company in the world, right? They're run by rational people. They're not run by the emotions of somebody who's gone. There are slides. We've published the slides. It says Apple saying to Samsung, we would have preferred that you licensed our patents, and here's a price. And Samsung said, well, that price is too high. And they've been – obviously, they couldn't achieve a price in a negotiation that was suitable to either party. But I think that number has come down significantly since the initial $30. I think it's pretty obvious that in the future, Samsung can appeal this for all they want. But what they really need to do is start paying the appropriate license fees to Apple and end all this litigation around the world. I mean, this is just one lawsuit, right? There's lawsuits in Australia, Germany, South Korea. There's another lawsuit in a few months over the Galaxy Nexus. Samsung can't keep risking this domino effect of lawsuits going against them. And I think the smarter move for both parties is to end all this litigation, do some sort of cross-license worldwide settlement, and move on with making products. And I think that's kind of what everybody wants them to do.
Neil, I got to ask, if you look at the judgment and you look at the patents that were ruled to be infringed, how many of those translate directly into what we would call the Google Android experience? So when you look at, say, the Samsung Galaxy S3, how many of those could be used against the current crop of Android products.
It looked like, for the most part, they did not find against the... It was a... They were finding against TouchWiz, not against the Google experience.
So, I mean, they can't run this lawsuit anymore, right? I mean, they'd have to come up with an entirely new docket, an entirely new set of complaints for them to continue.
Yeah, I mean, but they... Yeah, I mean, you can't... Apple pays its lawyers too much to have them cut and paste the complaint from a year ago.
They'll write a whole new one.
they'll come up with some new arguments. But I've heard from a few people that Google thinks the newest version of Android, Jelly Bean, solves the patent problem.
Right.
So we'll see. But again, it's like, you know, Jelly Bean is a pretty highly differentiated product. Like I look at the Nexus 7 that I have, which I really like. I think it's a terrific little product. And it's really different than the iPhone. Everything about it is different than the iPhone. You don't use it and say, this is a copy of an Apple product. You say, this is a really unique and different product. And that's the goal. Like, ultimately, that's the goal. You can complain about the patent system and intellectual property and all this stuff. And yes, our system has very meaningful flaws and is broken in some ways. But the whole idea is that Apple made one thing and Samsung has to make another thing. And having more different things is good, right? And so if all this noise pushes these companies to make different kinds of products, I think we actually do benefit.
But if Google is saying that Jelly Bean solves all the patent problems, why would Samsung be forced to the bargaining table? I mean, couldn't they just say, okay, fine, all of our phones from now on are the Google experience. They're Jelly Bean and above. If that gets rid of all the patent complaints, I don't see what makes them any more willing to settle with Apple.
Because what you want is you want certainty, right? Businesses run on certainty, not on risk. So you want Samsung and Apple need to have an agreement that says, we agree that we will cross-license our patents. The legal technical phrase is freedom of action. So we'll be able to have freedom of action. Maybe Samsung has to pay Apple. Apple can use the 3G patents. Samsung can use the other patents. And we can both make products and not worry about legal issues in the future. Right. And that's what you want. You want that certainty.
Of course, this makes the barrier to entry for almost any other company almost impossible. Yeah. I mean, how does this stimulate innovation? You'd almost think these guys are all working together just to say, hey, let's make this billions of dollars so no one else will even dare come in.
You could say it stimulates innovation because you better not copy somebody. You better make up something new and innovative.
This is why Google needs to sign the deal with Apple, right? Because if they get the blanket license for Android, then people can go use Android to make other products. And that's important. I mean, that's what Microsoft
does. As long as it doesn't look like a smartphone.
Or a rectangle.
Look, I have this is my new smartphone. Maybe I can get away with that. Look, it has a slide out, a new innovation.
What is that?
Yeah.
That's my air conditioner.
Looks like every other air conditioner remote control.
But I think there's functionality and there's design. And when it comes to design, you know, at what point, and maybe there's all kinds of trade dress lawsuits about a car. You know, it has four seats, it has four wheels, it has a steering wheel. You know, at what point does a smartphone, does that become just something standard that everybody can, you know, use and move on? And the innovation maybe is in the OS or the software, maybe in the presentation layer of the GUI.
Look, Neelai, there are people
Let me specifically respond to the car thing, and then because I hear that a lot. You can make a car, and Ford won't sue you for doing four wheels and a steering wheel. What they will sue you for is making a Mustang, right? And that's really important. That's a huge difference, like in cars. And yeah, some cars, like, you know, family sedans, to my eye, they all look the same and they're not distinctive and innovative. But the Mustang is like a classic icon of automobile engineering. The Corvette, you know, there's all kinds of Ferrari. You know, you can't run around making cars that look like Ferraris because Ferrari will sue you. They'll say, that's our mark.
What about the kit cars that do exactly that, that look exactly like a Ferrari?
So again, underreported, right? It's not a $1 billion lawsuit. So it doesn't hit the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Those companies get sued left and right, right? They all have licenses to these designs because that's what you need. You can't take somebody else's investment into.
But again, you are really talking about a look and not necessarily, okay, I built a Mustang. By the way, I don't think Ford would sue anyone. They're such a friendly company. you can't take, you can't design the Mustang and rip off the design, but you could put a 500 horsepower engine in.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
okay.
So
that's more the OS of the car than it is the design. So it really comes down to design again.
Yeah, it comes down, again, the specific thing here that was really important, I think, to Apple was we invested all of this time. We took this huge risk in making the iPhone. This is a story they told the judge. They told the jury, rather. It took us 5 years and millions of dollars to invent the iPhone, and it's famous. This is everybody knows it. Samsung took 3 months to copy it and didn't bear any of the risk. So that's wrong, right? I mean, we should be rewarded for the risk and the money that the risk we took and the money we spent. Now, it's not one-to-one with cars, right? Obviously, it doesn't match. A car isn't a smartphone. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But what you can say is, yes, there are certain fundamental necessities of a car. There are certain fundamental functional necessities of a TV or a smartphone. And those things are written out of the law, right? That Samsung's argument to the jury was, you know, they literally said, let's not pretend you can patent a grid of icons. But what the jury said was, Apple's grid of icons is distinct. It's not determined by functionality. You can make different kinds of grids of icons, and Samsung copied Apple's grid of icons.
And their design.
I characterize the case the entire month the case was running. The case, Apple's argument was always, just look at this. And Samsung's argument was, let's look at it in painful, exhaustive detail.
And all that did is cause the jury to wrap it up in 3 days and say, we're going home. Thanks for nothing.
Exactly.
All right. We're talking with Neil Patel from The Verge. He is an attorney, even though he may not play one on TV. And he's a great writer about technology. The Verge has really done a great job of covering this. We're very glad to have you. Robert Ballister from This Week in Enterprise Tech. And what is it? The Tech Stop?
TheTechStop.net.
.net. Are you still doing that, or is it on hiatus while you work for us?
That's on hiatus while I do Twit. I don't
want
to. You
do such a good job on that, on This Week in Enterprise
Tech.
Well,
it's fun.
We'll talk more about that in a little bit. And Adam Curry from NoAgendaShow.com. I suppose if I say that NASA was able to send a patch to the Curiosity rover.
In New Mexico.
In New Mexico. You wouldn't even, you know, you wouldn't be impressed.
You're just trying to make me look bad. The chat room hated me from the second the show started.
They already hate you. You have besmirched Neil Armstrong, and we'll get the rain stick out a little later on. One last bit on the one last right. bit. I don't know if they heard that, but I did. One last one last bit on the Apple Samsung thing. Enrique Gutierrez writing on Google Plus. He says, "I'm sitting in a Starbucks. While I'm waiting for my drink, I watched a guy with his friend pick up a newspaper. They were talking about the Samsung-Apple verdict. Guy says, so what they're saying, Samsung is the same as Apple? Friend says, I know, right? Makes me think twice about how much I paid for my MacBook. Seriously. Then a husband and wife, 10 minutes later, Samsung's iPad is the same as Apple's iPad, and I haven't paid how much for the Apple one? Honey, I told you they were a ripoff. He says, this is the best ad campaign Samsung could possibly buy. Because effectively the jury has said Samsung and Apple, they're the same by the Samsung. Isn't that interesting?
That's a great
point. I don't
believe
that story is true for 1 second.
Well, it's Enrique. It's
anecdotal.
It's anecdotal.
I mean, I just don't. I mean, like that, I think that's wishful thinking. And I think American consumers, they definitely know when they hear this is a ripoff, they tend to not pick the ripoff, right? I don't think they think in their head, oh, what a great value. I'll just buy the ripoff.
But do they?
You know, like, wow, man, I
don't know about that.
I mean, you look at the sales numbers, and I don't know about that.
Consumer in very high regard, my friend.
We've got people in the chat room who are saying that, well, Apple is only suing because, well, they're using this to block competition. But it's not working. I mean, the suit has been ongoing. They're trying to get injunctions against other products. Samsung still has some of the hottest selling phones.
Okay, one last question. One last question, and then we got to move on.
I've been trying to move on.
I've been trying for a while. Does Apple now get an injunction and stop sales of these phones in the U.S.?
Well, most of them are on sale. So
they're old stuff.
The Vibrant, you know, it's like.
Who cares?
But the Galaxy S2 is in the case, and the Galaxy S2 is still a huge seller. I think. It's like Boost Mobile or somebody just actually announced the Galaxy S2. Right. So, yeah, they're already – within 2 weeks, there's going to be another hearing on injunctions for these phones. And then in a few months, you know, the Galaxy Nexus
– is there a precedent set? Could Apple then say, well, we won this one, so you should block the Galaxy S3 and the Galaxy Note?
No, I mean, they're different findings of fact.
So they can't. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you have to sit in front of a jury again. What the judge can say is, you know, the standard for a preliminary injunction is irreparable harm, right?
Right.
So Apple can say, and likeliness, the judge has to decide your case is likely to win and there's going to be irreparable harm. So Apple can say now, the likely to win factor here is really high.
Right.
And this phone is directly competitive with our phone, so there's definitely going to be irreparable harm. Give us the injunction.
So it does influence that. It does perhaps make it easier to get an injunction.
Yeah, but it's not as simple as one phone is the other phone.
Right. Yep. But it does lend some weight to that argument if you want to go back to court and say, okay, now you got to stop the Note 2 and the Galaxy S3.
Yeah. Well, then we'll see again, Apple and Samsung, they need to come off their, you know, this weekend was probably intense. Everyone got really drunk for different reasons this weekend, right? I think they need to, you know, brush off their hangovers, sit down in a room, and figure out an actual agreement that makes sense for both companies moving forward. Because all this extra litigation, like I'm saying, it's just additional risk and uncertainty, and it's not good for either company.
Right. They've got to make an agreement. They really do.
Yep.
And Google, too. Hey, this show brought to you by that really nice car company.
They're sweethearts.
They're really nice. Don't make a Mustang, but they're really nice. I think they probably wouldn't take kindly to that, but they are a nice company. I know some of these guys, and I'm very proud for our association with the Ford Motor Company, that blue oval. I proudly drive a Mustang and love it. Now, let me tell you, if you are a Ford fan, you've got a new site just for you, social.ford.com. This is a great place to read articles about Ford technology. In fact, I have a little one there about an interview I did with Jim Bukowski, who's a Ford technologist, about kind of some of the stuff that's coming to Ford and Ford Sync in the future. I thought it was very interesting stuff. But there's also got an ideas section where you can post your ideas, read other people's ideas for ways that you could improve the Ford automobile. Bring back the Capri. Yeah, baby. The Capri MK3. Vote on the ideas. Let the world know what you think. It really is kind of fun. There's images.
I had a Capri with a leather top.
Did you?
And the little miniature bra that hung from the rearview mirror.
I don't think that's original equipment, but okay. Okay. You can add that. There's an aftermarket thing you can do. They also can get a badge here while you're there. I don't know this badge thing. The kids love the badge thing, I guess. But you can have a Ford fan badge. I could get the Mustang badge. I like the classic, the retro. And they also say, if you're a tech geek, there is a tech geek badge now. You're not just ahead of the curve. You're the one leading it. Looks like an NFC tag, actually. It's kind of cool. Ford is doing this at social.ford.com. Take a look at the latest vehicles from Ford. Drive one today, that 2012 Ford Focus Electric. Just love that. The Ford Sync, the My Ford Touch. They're doing some really cool stuff. Go to social.ford.com. It really was one big story. Next week and the week after, big stories. I'm sure that The Verge is, you know, you don't get to rest at all, Neil, because this week the Galaxy Note 2, Samsung at IFA will announce that in Berlin. Mm-hmm. The week after, we've got announcements from Nokia, from Motorola. Nokia will probably announce the new Windows 8 phone from the next Lumia, I guess. I don't know if they'll call it that. Maybe Windows RT tablets. Amazon's got an announcement. What are they going to? That's September 6th. What are they going to announce then? A new Kindle Fire?
Yeah, I think they're going to announce a number of media overtaken by Kindle Fire puns, I think, is by Amazon's. I think they're going to do a new. I think they're going to do a new tablet, something a little smaller, thinner. Not smaller, but thinner. And I've heard a lot about a phone, so I'm a phone. Yeah,
a phone. An Amazon phone. How would that work? Would they have a deal with a carrier, or would it be unlocked? How would that work?
I think they definitely need to have a deal with a carrier. I don't know how it's. I don't know how Amazon adds value to a phone platform. I'm assuming it'll be Android. So I'm very curious to see what they're differentiating. I mean, right now the carriers drive the phone market, right? If you want to make a phone, you can't just show up. You have to get in bed with a carrier in the United States, which I think is hopelessly broken. I actually think, to Adam's earlier point, you know, you can't be a startup and like make a new phone. Yeah, patents are one problem. The bigger problem is that you've got to sign a deal with the devil, right? You've got to go and get AT&T to sell your phone. And Amazon's got to do that. So I expect them to be on every carrier. They have the clout to do it. I just don't know what their value proposition to the consumer will be.
Yeah, you could see the value proposition of the Kindle Fire. It was basically very cheap tablet that was a portal to Amazon so people would buy Amazon stuff.
Yeah.
They don't need to add a phone to that to make it any more valuable.
No. I mean, I the only feature I can think of, which I think is kind of funny, that you could put on an Amazon phone is that the camera would automatically detect all the barcodes, the products around you in the store, and then tell you how much cheaper it'd be on Amazon.
You know, you go into stores now, they say, no cameras, no cameras. They know very well that's exactly what people do.
Right.
They go in, and there's actually a Jewish Talmudic law. I think it's Talmudic, the shopkeeper's law, or maybe not. It's more of an ethical conundrum where I know. I'm looking at you, Father Ballas.
Dr. Mom.
where the thought is, you don't go. It's unethical to go into a shop to get a shopkeeper to show you everything, you know, talk with you, go back and forth, and then go out and buy it from the guy next door. You have a certain moral obligation to buy it from the guy who showed it to you first. But that's exactly what people are doing now. They're going to a camera store. They'll play with the camera. They'll look at it. They say, thanks.
And they go on Amazon. Yep.
American consumers,
we call that
man.
The free market in America, Leo.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? It's unethical.
It is a Talmudic injunction, says Dr. Mom, not to raise the hopes of a shopkeeper.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. I didn't make that up.
We didn't go over that in law school. I missed that. I missed that day. It's do not be a heartbreaker while shopping.
Yes. Yeah, in this case, the jury sentences you to hell.
They call it the shopkeeper's law.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
By the way, their phone, they already have a name for it. It's going to be called the Amazon Kin.
Ooh, that's terrible.
Oh, I get it. There was a Microsoft phone of the same name. We need a rim shot because I'm slow. All right. And then, so then that's the silly season where all the little guys, Nokia, Motorola, Google, Amazon, Samsung, announced their stuff. And all of that is almost like an opening act for September 12th when Apple, we still don't know, but everybody seems to agree, will announce the new iPhone.
Yeah. It's going to be a really busy month.
It's crazy.
It's funny that Apple's setting a date or rumors of a date. They haven't set a date.
They haven't. No invitations yet.
But yeah, I'm pretty confident about the 12th. But you know, once that starts to get locked down, it's funny to see all the other companies start to lock down their dates as well.
Right.
And they all fell like seriously like dominoes. Like after this date, the 12th, kind of started circulating. Invitations for the week before it started flooding out. And it's funny because nobody wants to compete with Apple, but they're all perfectly happy to step on each other's toes.
Yeah, some of these announcements are the same day.
Yeah. The fifth and the sixth got very, very popular. I've already gotten Acer, Motorola, Samsung.
Some of that's because of the time. It's the beginning of a new quarter, right? I mean, this is when you might do it anyway for the shopping, you know, the holiday shopping season and all that, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what it is. But like, you know, Motorola, I think their event is probably the Droid Razr HD. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can definitely probably do that on the same day as Nokia or whatever. Like, you know, I don't need a full day to process like a higher resolution screen on a Droid Razr. Like, here it is. You could probably just send it to me in the mail. You know, like we don't need to do this dance. But
it's a sign of respect that they're saying the news cycle will be dominated once Apple makes an announcement. So we're not even going to bother.
Yeah.
After September 12th. And now here's the other thing. And John Gruber, and I don't know whether to think John is being disingenuous or is just an idiot savant or what. And I say that with respect because Gruber publishes a blog post this week saying, you know, I've been thinking, he says. He says, I've been thinking about this Apple announcement. And, you know, after a lot of thought, I've decided Apple probably won't do a mini iPad announcement the same time as they do the iPhone. Why would they do it? They'll have a separate announcement at a different time. I've been thinking. He apparently came up out of nowhere with this thought. The next day, in All Things D, John Pachowski says, yeah, that's actually what Apple's going to do. Have you heard anything about that? Has Apple called you with that rumor?
No, they have not.
Isn't Apple placed in these stories?
I don't know. Usually there's a huge. It's not John Pachowski who does the plant stories. It's the big Wall Street journal.
The journal will do it. Yeah.
I trust John. Both Johns in this case. I trust them, especially with their Apple sources.
But Gruber didn't imply it was an Apple source. He says I've been thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, Apple doesn't have a long history of announcing anything along the iPhone.
No, right? It makes a lot of sense. And I don't know if Pachowski is thinking or if he's got a tip.
Yeah, and particularly with Apple likes to be very focused, right?
Right.
And if they're going to do a whole new product like the iPad mini, I don't think they're going to be like, well, we've got the iPhone and here's this other
thing.
I think they're going to say, here it is. Like, here's some big deal for the iPad mini. I mean, we'll see. To answer your specific question, I think John Gruber really was just riffing. I mean, he's a columnist, right? His site is basically his column.
Right.
So I think he really was riffing.
They're in fireball.net.
Yep. And I think John Pachowski actually went and reported it out. And that's both of their styles, right?
Right.
Exemplary.
No, so
I think that's what happened there.
And they came up with the same exact conclusion. So September really is going to be even crazier.
Well, I don't know if Apple will announce it. I think they'll they announce on the 12th will be the phone probably.
Right.
And I think they'll wait until closer to the holidays to do the iPad.
You can't wait too much though, because you got to get it in the stores.
Yes, but it's their own. They own the stores.
Okay. Oh, that's right. It's their store.
They've got this figured out.
A certain advantage to that, isn't there? I didn't think of that. They don't care about Best Buy and Target.
Yeah. I just had a friend who bought an iPad at Best Buy over the weekend. And she's like, I got to go to Verizon and get this activated. And I was like, wow, that sucks. Like, really? You don't? Okay. Best Buy just lied to you when you bought this thing. Like, that's how bad your purchasing experience was.
Adam, what do you use for a phone?
I use the Galaxy Note. I think we talked about that last time.
Oh, you showed that. I love the Note. Yeah.
Yeah, I have big hands, so that works for me. I do get a lot of laughs when I hold it up to my head.
Do you use a stylus a lot?
You know what? I use it in two instances sometimes. I want to take a screenshot, and if I'm sending something to someone who's developing something, I'll say, look at this, circle it, and like, this is no good. And I do find it handy when someone says, take down this number, or my wife says, here's the confirmation code for UPS. You can fire it up pretty quickly, and I just write use the stylus.
It is easier to do that than to try to type it out, even on a big clip.
Much easier, So I use that surprisingly often, actually. I didn't buy it for that reason. I bought it for the size and the speed, and of course, silly me, they're coming out with something. Well, now they have the quad core or whatever.
Yeah, the Note 2 the Note 2 comes out in 3 days.
No, but is that still a phone or is that a tablet?
Still a phone. It's just a little bit bigger, 5.5 inches.
See, they got me. They jipped me. I hate that. So they've stolen that idea from Apple. You buy something, they come with something better a week later.
I love the Note. And, I'm using the Galaxy S3 right now.
It's also pretty big, right?
Well, it's the same resolution as the Note. It's just it's a little smaller screen. Mm-hmm. But I kind of miss the Note. And I keep pulling it out and looking at it lovingly.
Mine's bigger than yours.
Yours is bigger than mine. Yeah. I know.
I'm using the Note 2, actually.
Wait a minute.
There you go.
How big is too big for a phone?
I keep
It fits in a priest pocket.
Yeah? Okay.
But people don't understand that priest vestments have pockets that are 0.38 inches bigger.
Secret pockets.
Than normal people. Yeah. Yeah.
I am an Apple guy, and honestly, I got bored of their icon lineup and not being able to customize and do other things. And that's when I went to Android. I'm a Cyanogen mod guy. I like that. Try and rip out as much of the tracking stuff. I haven't done it yet on the Note. I'm a little worried about rooting it. All the time, all of a sudden, boop, there goes my GPS flips on for no reason. I don't like that.
No, that's the one issue. And that's one of the reasons I don't use the mods. I love Cyanogen mod, but.
No, but that doesn't happen with the mods.
That happens
on the stock.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. You're using CM9 on the Note?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'd use it on my Nexus. And liked it very much, except somehow when there's an update, then the phone would go a little crazy to not deal with updates. And by the way, stop with the updates.
There have been a lot.
This is not good. You update. I'm seeing this from big companies. You update an app, and then the next day, we're fixing a few things that we screwed up on the update yesterday. That's very annoying.
I cannot
get that? You don't
no,
see that?
I totally agree with you. You open the iPhone or the iPad, and there's 30 updates. Every day.
Right. And if you don't do it, then before you know it, you're going to be sitting around for an hour waiting for everything to update.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know, especially on the iPhone, now that they've got Wi-Fi sync, I have no idea why it doesn't just auto-update every night when I plug it into the dock.
It should just.
Well, the security implications for that.
Android
auto-updates, that's right.
Facebook is allowed to update itself. I don't want to babysit Facebook. Like, I trust them.
Right.
I should be able to do that.
I'm sorry. Okay. I just love it when someone says, I trust Facebook. That's
well,
great.
He's saying is I trust them to do certain things.
Okay. I know. I'm sorry.
You know where you stand with Facebook. Right?
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Facebook isn't going to put a virus on my phone, is what I'm saying.
No, but
they will, however, take all of my...
It is a virus.
Facebook is a virus.
They don't have to.
What are you talking about?
They don't have to. That's exactly right.
We are the virus.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is one of the rare cases where I am absolutely with Adam. I have a brand new Jelly Bean Nexus here, but I stay on my S2 because I have a stable mod that's rooted, and I've ripped out all the tracking software.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm paranoid like that.
Yeah. I do think
it's the NFC that's going to be weird. That's the stuff that I'm very interested in seeing how that plays out.
In what respect? Are you worried that people will...
communications, you get an RFID chip can execute things on an API in your phone, correct?
Right. But that's RFID, which has a much greater range than NFC.
I'm sorry?
RFID has a greater range than NFC. NFC is a passive technology.
NFC is almost contactless.
But doesn't NFC work off of an RFID chip? So if I shot confetti into the air and had little RFID chips on it and it had some instruction, I could make Times Square all go to my website on New Year's Eve?
No. That case, it would work, but you need almost physical contact with the two antennas in order to make NFC work.
Yeah, that confetti never gets anywhere, does it?
I know.
you are right that NFC is the same. It's a subset of RFID, but the particular subset it is, is it limits the range of communication to 4 inches.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the whole... It's kind of almost exactly what NFC is about is, yeah, we'll do RFID, but, you know, you got to be close. And at four, I've never got it to work with 4 inches. I almost always have to tap it.
That's why the NFC antenna...
4 inches have never been a problem.
this is the NFC antenna. It's so big because it's so low power, so you have to get right up next to it in order to activate it.
We have...
Now, your warranty's voided, you know.
No. That's the Nexus 7 is designed to take off the backs. Buy backs.
I love
to change the color.
Love that. That to me.
That's the $199 tablet.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yep. That tablet's amazing.
Yeah. No. The Nexus. Everybody should buy a Nexus 7. Like without. Like it, to me, you know what it is. The interesting thing to me about the Nexus 7 is that it is. It's like finally the real answer to the iPod Touch, because Android has never had a device like the iPod Touch where it's like, I don't want to get a phone. I don't want to contract. I don't want to do all this crap. I just want to play with the apps, right? The Nexus 7 is that device for Android in like every reasonable way. It's, you know, it doesn't run tablet apps or all great tablet apps. It runs all these great phone apps for Android. It's $200. You can just buy it. You can consume a bunch of media. You can screw around with it.
It's virtually disposable.
Verizon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's a great product. And, it really shows like, that's why Samsung should stop making TouchWiz, right? Because the stock Google experience now is so good. They could just give it to people, and it's different and meaningfully better than some stuff on iOS.
In fact, I would say TouchWiz and Sense and Blur and all of these other kind of carrier and phone add-ons are really a negative. People want the plain Google experience now.
Yeah, you know, I don't know who was telling me this, but it's like some insane number of people, when they buy a Windows laptop, they just reinstall Windows. Like 30% of Windows customers. But you can't do that on a phone, right? You've got to root it and mod it and do all this stuff. I think we're going to see a big push towards stock Android in a lot of places.
I think Samsung finally has the clout to do it too. But they've started doing that with the S3, which is, it used to be they were just trying to get their phones into the window. And so they would do whatever the carriers asked them to. Now they're such a big manufacturer, and they've got such popular products.
Let me just ask a question.
They can say, look, this is the product. Take it or leave it.
Who makes this? Let me just ask the audience in our studio. There's about 40 people here. Who makes this 7 tablet? Anybody know? Who? I wonder if anybody knows. Because what I'm thinking, after this trial, it looks like a Samsung and Apple world, doesn't it? The chat room knows it's Asus. But I think the general world probably thinks this is a Galaxy tablet.
There are a few people back here that were,
I knew.
It was the first person who said it, and everyone else just repeated
it. Yeah, what he said.
I heard a Samsung here somewhere.
But I do think that people feel like it's Samsung, and that it's really a Samsung-Apple world now, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, for phones, it's absolutely a Samsung-Apple world.
What happened to HTC, Neil? Why'd they make good stuff. The One is a great phone.
No, they do. They make terrific stuff. I think, if I had to buy an Android phone on a carrier, I would probably, aside from the Galaxy Nexus, I'd probably get a One Series phone. I don't know, man. I think they played a little too fast and loose with their carrier relationships. I think, they don't manufacture the stuff. They can't bring the prices down. They can't make the profit margins go up. And that the stuff they were doing with Sense, the last version of Sense particularly, was really over the top, heavy handed.
Yeah.
And I think Samsung just is their, Samsung's best selling phone in America is not the S2 or the S3 or whatever. It's the Galaxy Prevail, which is like a prepaid phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And, that came out during the trial. And HTC doesn't compete at that, in that huge piece of the market that we never think about. They tend to compete at the top end. So I think HTC is going to turn it back around. Their phones are really good. I think they understand their structural problems. But yeah, I mean, Samsung dominates because they're able to produce so much stuff. Just Samsung dominates in volume. They're like, here's 1,000 phones.
Right.
One of the funniest parts of this whole case, when the jury was reading the verdict, they had to read the names of all of these phones infringed and infringed patents. And just, I kind of wondered, if you're Samsung, you're in that room and you're listening to somebody say mesmerize, vibrant, fascinate, gem, Galaxy S4G Epic 5 Touch. It's like, are you finally embarrassed? Has it finally hit you that this is stupid? I hope so.
Better than numbers. It's better than 1374X.
Yeah, but it's just, it was funny. We were on our podcast when we were at the Vergecast. We were talking, Josh made a joke about the impact of the Samsung Vibe. And what he meant was the impact on the market of Samsung's, their aesthetic. And then we discovered that Samsung actually makes phones called the Impact and the Vibe. So people were getting confused. And it's like, you've got to calm down somewhere. But that's how that's why they're winning over HTC, because they flood the market with these devices.
We're going to take a break. We'll talk some more. I don't want to say it's the word Samsung again through the rest of this show. Might say Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no more Samsung. And I do want to know, we maybe do a little bit more phone, because I'm curious if Nokia or Motorola has a chance in hell. We'll talk about Google and the new copyright law in Germany that prevents them from doing any linking to newspapers. And a lot more. Lots more to come with Nilay Patel from The Verge, Adam Curry from NoAgendaShow.com. If you were to pull out the rain stick right now, would it cause a hurricane in Tampa, Florida?
Well, I'm glad you asked this, Leo. I was given a rain stick on our most recent No Agenda Hot Pockets tour, which we do every summer. It was given to me in Salt Lake City, Utah. I had it in the back of the trailer. I took it through three states, and these were severe drought states. Every single state we went through, it rained between 9 and 12 hours later.
Wow.
Came to Austin, shook that stick.
Wow.
We had a rainstorm right over the house. And it is not beyond the realm of possibility that this tropical storm, possible hurricane, has been caused by the rain stick.
So what kind of rain stick is it? Is there a brand name? Is it a Hohner rain stick?
This is a handmade rain stick.
Okay.
It was made by one of our producers.
That's beautiful.
It's a beautiful piece of work. And I'm so happy that I can try this on your show.
Go ahead.
Because we did this a week ago.
If it rains in Petaluma,
you'll be a believer?
I'll be a total believer in the next, because we're in the dry season right now. It shouldn't be raining for another month at least.
It has to be about 9 to 12 hours.
Okay.
Now, Leo, you know who the world's largest producer of rain sticks is?
Who?
Samsung.
You are supposed to say that name!
All right, here we
what
go,
What does
Leo.
It sound like? Let's hear it. That's beautiful.
Does it sound pretty?
That's beautiful, yeah.
I'll give you another shake, Leo. And one more.
Is it an inch per shake?
And one more for Petaluma. Well, it's a turn. There you go. And let me know if it rained 9 hours later where you are. I do believe that somehow through these nets we can get something done.
That would be amazing. If everybody in the Twit audience, if you just let us know if it rains in the next 9 hours, then we'll know there is some truth to the rain stick.
New Twit t-shirt.
You can try and Google rain stick. You can barely find a history on the rain stick. It's all, oh, it's a great musical instrument. It's not. It sucks as a musical instrument. You can't get any different tones out of it. You know, make a rain stick out of toilet paper. Very hard to find any real history.
Well, according to Wikipedia, it was believed to be invented in Chile or Peru and was played in the belief it could bring about rainstorms.
Yeah, but that's about all you can find.
Right.
From the Book of Knowledge.
But the Book of Knowledge. There is an article in the Peruvian Journal which describes the cactus used.
Yeah, where they turn the thorns inside inside out. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So you use every bit of the cactus.
There's no cactus goes to waste.
No wasted cactus thorns. This show brought to you by our friends at, hey, this is perfect, GoToAssist.com. If you're in IT, I know Father Robert Ballister has been praying over a few computers lately. You might want to try GoToAssist from Citrix. It lets you take control of your IT world from a cloud-based platform. We've talked about it before because, of course, GoToAssist is the number one remote access solution out there with a big, big chunk of market share. But now the folks at Citrix have added a feature to GoToAssist that I think makes it even better. It's remote. In addition to remote access, it's remote monitoring. So here's how it works. If you visit GoToAssist.com, you can actually you can get all this kind of explained to you. You put the crawler from the GoToAssist remote monitoring on your network. It will not only identify all the hardware, including every network attached device and computer, it will also identify all the software. So now you have this great setup where you've got all the stuff that's on the client network monitored for you. Next thing you do is you can set up a dashboard, and you can use custom or built-in little plugins for the dashboard that do things like analyze server and network performance, display stats, track key metrics like CPU, load averages, disk utilization. So you know what's going on. And then you've got these proactive alerts by email, by SMS, on your mobile phone, by instant messenger to let you know if things like, you know, well, hey, the server performance is down, you know, the Wi-Fi is not working, or the toner, even things like the toner cartridge is running out, or disk space is falling below 5%. And you can get in there and fix it either with a remote support, or if it's something like a hard drive, you can go in there and put a new hard drive in. And you're now a support hero because you knew ahead of time what was going to go wrong with the network, and you fixed it before it became a big problem. It is a tool that anybody who's in support should have in their tool belt. And if you are in the managed support, managed service business, this is a must-have. By the way, it lets you support via iPad as well as by computer, Mac or PC, any kind of hardware. This is a great solution. Try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com, GoToAssist.com. You can, for 30 days free, try both the monitoring and the remote access. You just have to use the promo code TWIT. Okay, TWIT. Click that promo code link on the Try It Free page and use our offer code so we get credit, and you are set to go. And I think you will find this is absolutely the best. Our own IT guy, Russell, is actually about to convert over to it because it's so much. He pays a lot more money for the stuff he uses, and it's not nearly as good. GoToAssist.com. Offer code is TWIT. So the other big, another big story this week, and I don't know if it's too inside baseball or not, but we can talk about it a little bit, is Twitter and the developer space and what's happening at Twitter. Twitter seems to have decided that it's basically saying, hey, thanks for all the help, developers. Thanks for all the help, third-party clients. We'll take it from here.
This is just proving the same thing that we talked about last time I was on the show with Facebook, Leo, that the display ad business does not work. And they're doing everything now, desperately trying to give value to their news feed. And a lot of that is the layout. And I think they've still taken the wrong track. They should have completely become infrastructure, licensed their API. They would have made a lot more money longer term, being a long infrastructure player. And I think that this is a death warrant for them.
I wish they had done that. And you were absolutely right about Facebook. I mean, look at the Facebook stop. You were on.
How close did I come to my 5-month, $17 prediction?
You nailed it.
Almost.
Yeah. Well, it's not 5 months yet, so we still have time.
No. Yeah.
Is that right?
But, yeah.
Do you call up Robert Scoble at night and just laugh?
Yeah. Hey, Scoble. But people don't understand. And I've been in the internet advertising business for a long, long time and started my first company in 93. People don't understand when it comes to advertising, there's a scarcity of inventory that really drives the pricing. It's extremely important. And maybe I can just break it down very simply.
Would you? Because I don't understand what you're talking about. Tell me what you mean.
Okay. So when it comes to display ads,
yeah,
basically a banner or a link, there is unlimited inventory.
Right.
Facebook, the more people are on Facebook or the more people are on Twitter, the more inventory there is. Supply and demand, you know, I don't make these things up, but markets kind of work that way. If there's a lot more supply than there is demand or unlimited supply, the price automatically goes down. It's different when you have a television show, or even actually Twit is a great example.
We have limited ad inventory. We can only run 4 ads in a show.
Exactly. And so let's just do the numbers real quickly. You have an audience that is defined, not just people, and maybe we have some social graph, and we might know a little bit about what companies they like if they're complete idiots and they click on the Coca-Cola like button, whatever. But we know what your audience
that
is.
That is That's a dumb thing to do, to like Coca-Cola on Facebook.
I'm telling you. This is why you have companies like Ford, who know that there's a technology audience that is interested in this stuff. You have go to My Assist for the IT professional.
Right. Yeah, it's targeted. They know what they're getting.
Let's just say there's only, what did you say, 6 slots? Is that what you have?
Not
on
even
the show?
That. 4.
4. So let's just, I'm picking numbers. I have no idea. I'm just going to say 500,000 people. You have a CPM cost per thousand. I'll just pick a number, $40 for each 1,000 people that watch or listen to the show. Now you're talking some serious money. Now you just made, $20,000 for one spot.
That's
I don't know if
right.
this is true.
No, I'm that's about right. That's exactly
very
right.
different numbers.
That's very close.
But these are television numbers, get much higher than that. There can only be one company that has the beverage on the desk of American Idol.
Right.
It's limited inventory. So when it comes to display ads, it has no value because there's no scarcity in this. And this is exactly the same thing that Twitter is running into. Display advertising is not a business. It's remnant inventory. It's throwaway. It's trash.
Well, and it's even worse for Twitter and Facebook because more and more people are using those sites on mobile where they're not even seeing display ads.
Precisely.
So they have ads on the website and they got nothing on the mobile.
Exactly. And if you really look at the intrinsic value, I know we're talking about Twitter, but the intrinsic value of Facebook, which you know a lot about because of their S-1 filing and their most recent quarter, they're probably really only worth $7 a share.
Right.
So that's why it was very easy for me to say, this is $17 in 5 months. We probably have, 5 or 6 weeks left, and it probably can still go that low.
Right. But
and Twitter, they're desperately trying to control everything, control their messaging, control the display, if you will. This is what this is about. If you look at the API requirements, it's all about display, what you can and cannot display in a view of a tweet or a list of tweets.
Exactly.
They're trying to control it, and they're trying to control it for advertising messaging. And even if everyone is delighted with ads popping up in their tweet feed, it's not an end to an end. It does not pay off at the end. The more people join, the more useless remnant inventory they've created.
Well, Neil, you're in this, you're not particularly, but The Verge is in the business of display ads. How do you make those work for you?
Well, we're sold out, so
right.
we're doing well.
Because unlike Facebook or a YouTube, it is quality real estate. When you go to The Verge, you know the audience, and it's you know the content. You're not going to get a groin shot video.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry. How can you be sold out? I don't understand how your inventory can be sold out.
Well, because you say we have these many ad units, and we do the same thing.
On a page, but you don't have a limited number of page views. That's, in fact, you want more. You want a bigger audience all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the mechanics are. I just know that the salespeople tell me we're sold out, which is good news.
That's what salespeople do to create fake scarcity of inventory. This is exactly what those guys with brown shoes do.
Yeah,
bullcrap.
There's, I mean, literally, this wall behind me in the office is literally the wall that separates us from the sales team.
Yeah, you shouldn't go over there.
You
shouldn't.
But, you know, the thing for us is we don't run Facebook. We don't run Twitter, right? Our model is an old model, right? We run a publication. We make high-quality content. When we left to start The Verge, I always complained about the ads AOL was putting on Engadget. At one point, I think AOL even threatened to fire me because I was complaining so loudly that our ads were crap. And so when we left to start The Verge, we said we want to have, you know, a great publication, has great content, and it also has to have great ads in it because that's part of the user experience of our product. So we've been very – our sales team is very motivated.
That's smart.
Our sales team is motivated to get good ads. I don't know anything about that side
but
of the business.
I have to say,
I just know that it pays my bills.
I'm looking at the front page of The Verge, and you have literally two, not one, just two, yep. No more ads. You have one at the top and one here, and that's it on a very large page. And so in a way that you are, they are constraining the inventory, Adam, and I think that's a smart move.
Well, they're not, Leo. They're constraining the amount of ads on a page. The inventory is the number of page views.
Right.
And that is not constrained by definition.
Well, I understand. And you're taking a model that was based on print where there literally was a constraint. You have this many pages in the magazine and you're applying it to the web where there is no constraint. So the model doesn't work. I understand. I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can talk about it, but I will tell you that this conversation for me is way out of my depth.
I understand.
But that's okay. You're a lawyer, and we were way out of our depth on the term thing.
No, but and it's rightly so because editorial and advertising should not mix, and I agree with that. But it's very germane to the conversation about what do you do if you're Twitter to monetize,
I think Adam's point about Twitter. We actually just last week ran a piece called "Introducing Twitter's New Business: Twitter." by our guy Peter Bone.
I love it.
Which is great. Adam's point about they should be the infrastructure, they should be the they should license the API is that's great, but you know, you can look at sort of the Android model and say, well, that this is the problem with Android. Android said we made the infrastructure, here you go. And they're improving the infrastructure as fast as they can, right? Android updates are great, and then the API partners, the phone manufacturers, aren't taking them. So for Twitter to say we're the infrastructure means you're giving up a high rate of innovation. You're saying now we're the utility. Once you say something is utility, there's no more innovation.
No, I disagree. I think the innovation was in the developers who were using their API and creating amazing things. And once you've got these guys in, you can do all kinds of deals with them. For their access to the API, to the friend finder, all of this stuff.
But they're not saying to those developers, you can't do it. They say, if you want to do it, you got to come talk to us. And No.
I disagree. They're saying, here are very specific guidelines about what you can and cannot display and the way a tweet has to be displayed, completely stifling any innovation on, like TweetDeck. TweetDeck, that was something completely new, completely different. You couldn't have that type of innovation now with these developer guidelines that have been sent, the new law. And above and beyond that, they're saying you can have this many accesses to the API without coming to us and making some kind of deal. So basically, you're just a slave to Twitter, and you're not going to win anything.
Yeah, I'm with Adam on this. They're really constraining what developers can do. You look at something like Klooshbag, which we've shown. It's a funny.
What's Klooshbag?
That's the one that it looks through all your tweets and it finds out how klooshy you've been. Have you abused the English language? Have you abused retweets, etc., etc.?
I have to.
Everyone gets a Kloosh. It's clout.
I gotta try
it's making
this.
Fun of clout.
I wonder how I'm gonna do.
But something like that, even though that's supposed to be a joke, that won't exist under the new infrastructure that Twitter is
creating. I'm a bit of a prat.
You're a bit of a prat, right?
According to Klooshbag. Can you see this, Chad? Yeah, I'm 39 on the Klooshbag.
I think I'm 12 because I deleted all my retweets. I used to be like 69.
Yeah, that's where I score high. Bad. Retweet abuse.
Yeah, but I mean, that odd stuff was what made Twitter interesting. It wasn't all the tweets about, yo, I'm about to eat a burrito, or hey, I'm in the bathroom. It was what people could actually do with the information that people were putting out and open on the internet. Well, get rid of that, developers aren't going to have that fun little hook anymore.
So let me, I agree on a lot of that stuff, but let me give you the counter example that to me is the danger, which is email, right? email is an open standard. Everybody can use it. You can do whatever you want. There's supposed to be all this innovation in email clients. Ugh,
there's not.
But there's not. And the core email standards have not evolved either because there's nobody driving them who can extract value from the effort they put into updating them.
But why does there always have to be that kind of value? I think email's been around for a long time, and there's been a heck of a lot of innovation from the days of Elm and Pine up to the Gmail interface.
But then it stopped. I mean,
there's been a lot of innovation. Yeah, You know, at a certain point, it's what it is.
But the innovation is not in how email works. It's in an email client and where the client lives.
Right.
Right. But that's not the kind of innovation. There's no infrastructure innovation, right? The spam problem for email has all been solved by Google in the cloud, not at any level by the actual utility of email. Twitter faces a similar problem, and on top of it, they're trying to like feed themselves. So they need to take control of the utility they provide and say, this is how we're going to get value out of it. Because otherwise, you have to pick...
Right, but that's a back-end process, so that would be perfect for them to say, we'll reduce the spam, and there's tons of Twitter spam. They could also say, we'll reduce the fake accounts, and there's tons of those. There's all kinds of things that they could do, and I think that there's probably 20 years of innovation in that type of back-end infrastructure.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I just got to point out, Adam Curry is, according to Klugspeg, quite a nice person with a mere 17 points on the Klugspeg scale. But John C. Dvorak.
Right. I need to pull out some weaponry.
John C. Dvorak, not
right.
a nice
what
person.
Here's we have today for you.
First the judge.
You steal
now
that
the
from the Game of Thrones? What the hell?
This is my knighting sword.
You know, Adam, the last time he was on, pulled out a handgun that fires shotgun shells.
Wow. I
bought a different one, but since everyone is like bringing guns on the show, I felt kind of clushy about doing that. But I do have a fun one to show you if you're interested.
I do. Hold on a sec, because we got to take a break. And by the way, Nilay does have a weapon. He's got some sriracha sauce just ready. Anytime.
don't squirt me.
That stuff's worse than mace, I got to tell you. You squirt that in somebody's eyes, they're in deep trouble. Hey, let's see what you missed. If you missed any of Twit this week, we had some fun. Take it away.
This is Twit. Mac Break Weekly.
If you're flying, I'm buying.
It worked.
Yeah, I'm
going to Legoland, everybody.
Point number one, talk about how you never take a vacation. Point number two, talk about
Dance, Marionette, dance.
Masterfully executed.
Sorry.
He punched me.
Out loud.
The Social Hour.
For our Rad or Fad this week, wanted to talk about the Bike Charge Dynamo. Now, what this is, it's this little contraption, and it goes onto your bike wheel. The idea being that you can charge your smartphone, your iPhone, for example, basically by biking.
Twit Live specials.
They're staying on the mat. with the head turn. And I'm not sure that Lisa gets the point because we are staying inside the ring. Although that's an impressive tackle.
Know-how.
I want to watch Twit on my work computer, right. But I don't have admin access. So how do I actually do that? How do I take Chrome or something like that and bring it over to my computer and be able to use it and watch Twit?
If you missed this week on Twit, you missed a lot.
Those sumo suits, everybody should. I want to buy those. You got to rent them.
You sweat really bad when you're in it, don't you? Yeah.
We went through a couple of cans of Febreze before the day was done. It was a lot of fun.
Not too sanitary.
I'm sorry. I stepped on you, Leo, but you were saying that Dvorak has a bigger Klugspeg score than me?
Yeah. You're like quite a nice guy, according to Klugspeg. You're 17 points. Dvorak is 49 points. He's like super, he's super noisy. So.
Surprise. And
by the way, Klugspeg is one of the sites that's going to go away because of the new Twitter API. They cannot they cannot do it anymore.
Unless they come and talk to Twitter.
Yeah, they have to talk to us. We want I mean, I presume that's money that they want. Hey, we're going to take a break, come back with more Adam Curry from noagendashow.com, Nilay Patel from theverge.com, and Father Robert Ballister of This Week in Enterprise Tech, our new enterprise show, which is Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. 1700 UTC. Great show. You're going to, what are you doing this week? You're doing something kind of different.
We let our fans vote on what they wanted to see. They want to see Power over Ethernet. We're going to be talking about CRM. We've actually got our guest for tomorrow's show is somewhere here in the audience, Lou MM, who came from the chat room.
Lou MM is in the studio?
He is.
Where's Lou?
He's back there. Yes.
Hey, Lou. Good to see you.
So we pull people out of the chat room because that's how much
we
love
Lou, can I say where Lou works?
Yes.
He works at Microsoft. In fact, Did you bring your Surface, Lou? Because he's been using the Surface tablet.
He's not supposed to talk about
Whoa,
it.
Whoa, he's got one. Did you just hold up a Surface? No. It's a Samsung.
Oh, no.
Samsung. The new Samsung. The Samsung Surface. Yeah, really. There well, we'll talk go. About this.
All right, Chad.
Sad trombone. Before we go on, though, let's talk a little bit about our friends at Gazelle. It is going to be the product season, the new product season, and you know you're going to be wanting to get some new stuff. And Gazelle is exactly what you need if you want to move on with your existing gadgets and get a little cash in your pocket so you can buy a new gadget. So what is your iPhone worth or your MacBook?
How about my I have an original iPad.
Ah, I don't know. Let's see. You have the first generation iPad. Are you you thinking you might want to get that new iPad mini? Is it Wi-Fi?
Yeah, this has no 3G. This is just
it's
the Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi only. Let me click that button. Mm-hmm. And how much memory?
I think it was the biggest at the time. What was
64
that?
64 gigs, maybe? Let's see. $175. That thing's worth
really?
$175. Not only that, they pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. They will also do the data wipe. You don't have to. They have the when they assess it for its, you know, its a condition because they want to make sure it's, you know, that it's they pay you fairly for the condition. By the way, sometimes they do bump the price up as well as lock the price down. These I get
29 gigs.
29 gigs.
I tell you, it says capacity 29 gigabytes.
Oh, you got the special 29 gigabyte.
What is that?
I don't know. There's something wrong there.
Available 21.6 capacity 29 gigabytes.
That's very. I must be a 32. But
it's
anyway,
a collector's item.
It is. They pay for the shipping. By the way, this offer is good for 30 days. So now this is the deal. You should go to gazelle.com now if you're thinking of getting rid of your old phone, your iPhone or your Samsung phone, or they take HTC, BlackBerry, LG, Motorola, and Nokia. Let's say you want the new Windows phone. This is your chance to move on. Get the quote now, because as soon as the new phone comes out, the value is going to go down. This is one thing we know for sure. Value never goes up on these things. They only get worth less and less. But this quote is good for 30 days. So get it now, and you'll get your money. You can get a cash, check, PayPal, or, and I recommend you do this, an Amazon gift card, because they'll bump it up 5%. They'll kind of rebate you their Amazon affiliate code. So 5% more when you get an Amazon gift card. These guys are good people. Really great. They have sold, let me just see, I have the number here somewhere. Over the last few years, oh, shoot, what did I do with it? I put it here somewhere. 300,000 customers, $50 million. $50 million they've paid out.
Hello.
Yeah, hello is right. Gazelle. This is just keep it in your back of your mind. Get the quote now if you think you might be buying something. It's a no obligation. Gazelle.com. And they, you know, it's funny. Gazelle likes to buy the ads right before the new iPhones come out. That's better than all things D.
Brilliant.
Now you know there's definitely a new iPhone coming out. Gazelle.
You know, and Leo, I have to say that not all products are worth less as they go on. In fact, I have some old Samsung phones that I think just sold for about $1.04 billion.
They were worth a lot more. A lot more to Samsung. Maybe this, I don't know. Is Barry Diller confused Adam Curry? He apparently, according to Peter Kafka, writing for All Things D, the New York Times is about to sell its About.com unit to Barry Diller and IAC for $300 million.
Yeah, I've been very surprised by the IAC purchases.
That's a that I mean if display ads don't work, about.com is not worth $300 million.
You know, I was he's bought some weird stuff. I was a pre-IPO investor in Ask Jeeves.
Oh gosh. But you made some money on that.
Oh, it was outstanding.
Yeah.
I spent it all in the last 10 years, but I made some good money then.
You don't have that plane anymore, huh?
Yeah, exactly. but then Diller bought it, you know? It's like they have a really weird philosophy about what has value, and I don't know the numbers of about.com. I think it probably was a good idea. I like the idea of a directory that you can browse. Browsing anything is going away with the internet, you know, just, you know, browsing an encyclopedia,
right.
Browsing a dictionary, and about.com had a little bit of a browse concept to it. I don't know if it's really worth $300 million, and maybe it's just his early ploy into buying the New York Times itself. I mean, that could be his end game.
one of the reasons that Times is interested is he's apparently offering cash. So $300 million cash for About.com. That's an interesting story. Dillard, is he not the guy behind Aereo? I think IACO.
The mini antennas.
Yeah, this to me, he could make all that money back and then some with Aereo. Really interesting.
Aereo is the most hilarious hack, I think, technology today. Because, you know, it's the idea that they've invented some tiny antenna. They've got a warehouse in Brooklyn full of antennas for people. It's just like, we've got to do better than this. I mean, it's a great idea, and the product is interesting, and it works well, and it delivers, you know, to the end user, it delivers what you want. You go to a website, you watch TV, right? That's what people want. But we've got to adjust, like, how we regulate television in a way that, like, doesn't require a warehouse full of tiny antennas in Brooklyn.
Well, and that's why he won that court case, right? Because he was being sued by the cable and the broadcast channels who say, you can't do that. And the court said, well, of course he can. He's just renting an antenna. It's one antenna per customer.
Well, he hadn't won yet. They asked for an injunction. Ah. They said there's irreparable harm. And
so the trial.
Now the lawyer goes and spoils the host story again.
That case is still going on.
That case will go on. And, you know, that'll be kind of a landmark case.
I mean, Aereo has no real future. I mean, of course, everything's going to be streamed on the internet. And this is Barry Diller, an old school television guy, you know, the original Fox Network. This is what he did. You know, this is what he knows and understands. And if anything, that's probably him just going, I got you, sucker. I'm still doing. But I don't think it has any long term value.
Because I love it. There's something about it. These antennas are about as big as a dime. I've seen it. Dr. Mom, and you can only get it in New York City right now.
Yep.
Which means, Nilay, you've seen it. But Dr. Mom brought her iPad here, and she did a little hack to sell her. She told her iPad, I'm in New York, and I played with it. The picture quality is excellent. It has DVR built into it. And what it is it's kind of the last mile for cord cutters, because you can be a cord cutter and watch everything on, you know, your internet access except for live TV.
Yeah, but it's also like, but just think about how remarkably stupid that is.
Well, I understand.
Like, if you're a cord cutter and you're like, the last thing I need is broadcast TV, I'm going to hope that Barry Diller builds a warehouse full of antennas for me so I can pay him $12 a month. Or I can go to Radio Shack and pay $12 for an antenna.
I guess.
And it's like, it's just, that's a problem. Like, I think that we'll see a real, I think the thing that Aereo will accomplish is not being a successful business. I think they will ultimately fizzle out because just what they're doing is so silly. But what they're gonna push the whole market towards is a real over-the-top cable service, right?
Now, you're right on with that.
That's the real thing we need, you know, and that's where you can say to whatever company, I want to watch television on my computer over the internet. And you can buy channels a la carte, all the stuff that people have been wanting to do for years. And we'll see television get really delivered over the internet.
There's something else going on in kind of the crazy antenna Wi-Fi community. It's very analogous to this. People are now buying these, you know, you have these little Wi-Fi, like $25 repeaters that can actually take a USB storage thumb drive. And they're setting them up. You can hack them. I think this was probably the original software hack was the blue boxes, the routers,
mesh.
The Linksys, the original Linksys.
Yeah,
the
VRTV.
And they're setting up access points.
Yeah.
And they're just dropping them in places. And you can share files. There's a little web server that they put on them. And now with WDS, they're starting to connect to each other and creating larger nets, 100 megabit per second Wi-Fi networks that essentially are completely decoupled from the internet and is kind of an over-the-top type of system. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on this when it comes to RF and Wi-Fi that is actually being built outside of the internet with connections to it. And, you know, when you talk about little tiny antennas, that is kind of exciting to me. It's some good stuff going on.
People may not know, but Adam Curry started one of the first ISPs. Metaverse, right?
I started OnRamp.
OnRamp, that's it.
Which was not the ISP OnRamp. And then we had Metaverse.com,
right,
which I was always allowed to use with Neil Stephenson's permission, as long as I didn't make t-shirts.
Really?
And then he said that turned into
he said, you can use Metaverse, but don't make t-shirts.
Yeah, as long as you don't make t-shirts or merchandising.
Interesting.
Yeah, a very nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool with it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, of course, this was 1993, And no one knew, you know, like MTV, you know, I registered MTV.com and they didn't know.
Right.
Well, they knew and they said, that's cool. We got the AOL keyword. They didn't care. We got music television keyword, baby.
That's all that matters. Yeah. So you know a little bit about these kind of nascent businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's very intriguing. This, by the way, for those watching on video, I know you can't if you're listening, but this is what the size of the Aereo antenna. And they put these in racks. That they put in a warehouse. In
what a hack.
It's a great, I don't know, I celebrate it. I just love it. I think it's a great
hack.
You
know, what's funny is, I when I was a lawyer, I was a copyright attorney, right? And I came out of law school and I represented kids who got sued for file sharing.
Really?
It was absolutely soul destroying. You know, they did it, so they got to pay.
And, right.
You know, like, I had kids who had to, like, drop out of school so they could, go work at a pizza joint so they could pay their settlement.
Oh, that's sad.
But, I actually have no compunction about downloading broadcast network TV shows off the internet.
Because it's like, free over the air, so why should...
It's free over the air. Yeah. They're literally, like, ABC is beaming Grey's Anatomy through my body.
Right. Right?
So if my wife wants to watch it, like, I'll just...
Right.
And it's... I'm going to get sued, I'm sure. Like,
because it is illegal. It is illegal, Mr. Lawyer.
It's absolutely illegal, and it's wrong. And I'm sure the cops are like...
No. No. It's illegal. It's not wrong. They're beaming it through my body. Why can't I download it if I just captured it?
Yeah, but it's one of those things where it's like, because we're so focused on the internet and streaming and this distribution, we often forget that these companies, their real business is running these massive broadcast operations.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's really valuable to a lot of people. And it's funny because what I really want is a DVR that does broadcasts, so I can watch live sports, and then has a host of internet services connected to it. And nobody builds that product, and I kind of don't know why.
Yeah, what do you want to pay for it?
I don't want to pay anything.
That's why nobody's building it.
But like, can you imagine what that would be like if you could get a box that runs Netflix, everything runs Netflix, as like Amazon Video, you know, hooks into all these other services, and has three tuners so you can record live TV off ABC, NBC, and Fox.
You intellectually understand why that's not happening. I mean, you understand the model that is breaking before our very eyes, which is the real-time stream of information that is being beamed through your body that contains commercials that you cannot necessarily...
No, I understand that, but there's some stuff there that's valuable, right? So, like, breaking news. When there was a shooting in New York last week, I turned on Channel 7 because I know that I'm going to get news from them faster and better than
anybody
else.
And you're willing to watch the ads in the middle of it, right?
Those devices have existed for a long time for the hacker and the maker community. We've been creating those for the last 15 years.
That's what Windows Media.
The problem is, if you try to have a manufacturer create them, then you have to make licensing agreements. You have to talk to the content providers.
Well, and look what's happening to Dish with their Hopper, which has a built-in commercial skipper. They're going to get sued out of existence, just like Replay TV got sued out of existence.
There's no reason why the current Google TV could do that.
Replay won, first of all. Replay and TiVo both won their lawsuits. I mean, that's what TiVo exists. The problem is that they're trying to get we're conflating two things. We're conflating all of the cable channels we want. Everybody wants Breaking Bad, so you got to get AMC.
Right.
Now you got to make the deal. I'm saying screw that. I'll get all that content off the internet somehow. Right, AMC is streaming it on their website. I'll figure it out that way. But all this broadcast stuff, this live stuff, football, which I want to watch football, so I'm never going to be able to cut the cord completely.
I saw the NFL is they're offering pregame now. They offered the Super Bowl last year streaming, and I think it's just a matter of time, just like Major League Baseball and the NBA, that you'll be able to see football streaming.
Yeah, but but the last piece right now for most people is sports. It's sports and news, and I think
Academy Awards and a few live things like that. The Republican
NBC
National
showed
Convention.
Us that this model is breaking very, very badly right before our very eyes, and it's not going to work out long term. And sports is extremely expensive, not just because of the licensing, because of the entire machine that's behind it, and you know the players and the stadium and the teams, etc. But it's also expensive to produce. I mean, if everyone really wants to pay their share, which they don't, then it would be possible to do all this with commercials, without commercials. There's all kinds of hybrid models, but it really is still too expensive to do.
So
and
what
I
happens?
Happen to know this stuff.
So what happens?
It's interesting. I spoke to who's the guy that produces the that crazy TNT show, the where they always have bombs going off. The team.
I'm sure the chat.
He also
knows.
Did the what happened to the electric car?
Oh, Burn Notice.
I'm drawing a blank. The chat room will know. Yeah, Leverage. That's the show I'm talking about.
Leverage.
And so this is the same guy produced What Happened to the Electric Car.
Oh, that was an amazing movie.
Morgan Spurlock?
Yes, he also did a follow-up only a couple of years ago, which kind of went nowhere. And
that was quite an expose. Yeah.
Yeah, he says they're getting closer. He says if you look at the Throne stuff, I don't watch that. What is it?
Game of Thrones. Throne
of Thrones.
HBO. Yeah. You got the sword, dude.
Yeah, that's for different uses.
Okay.
He says we're getting very, he says it's really funny how major motion pictures still have $300 million budgets. A lot of that is to promote it, obviously. And television is getting very close to where they can actually just say, okay, if we have X amount of people paying $199 or $399, that all the effects, et cetera, will deliver the entertainment experience people want. But he even, and he was pretty accurate on the electric car. And if you look at those documentaries, he says we're still 7 to 10 years out before we're really there. It all has to do with processing power, what we can do with video, et cetera. At the end of the day, there's a huge union issue in this industry. And I'm not saying it's a bad issue. I'm a member of AFTRA. But there is an issue with residuals, with rights. And
that's
not just the actors. That's grips. That's lighting. That's
nobody thinks about that.
Tech, everything.
Yeah, we all think about the big incumbents. We don't think about the workers, the people who actually make this stuff.
People who actually make it. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of people that go into making, shows. And they have, for good reason, because of, even though they are all kind of all slaves to Hollywood, it was much worse before it was unionized. And that's been in place for a long, long time. You're not just going to break that up. Certainly not with this president.
Huh. Well, maybe you'll break it up with YouTube. Maybe maybe all the people who, maybe they're just, that's the end of that. And the next generation's going to be YouTube stars, non-union.
I think people, at the end of the day, what are we talking about? It's entertainment and what's the real value and how important is it in your life? You could also play a board game,
right?
Which could be fun. I think that people still want a level of quality, and there's going to have to be incentive, or people just won't go into those industries. They'll just be doing something else. And of course, there's going to be some YouTube stars, but we've all seen South Park and the Department of Internet money. Where's the real money? Is it real money?
Right.
I don't think so.
No, I agree.
And even YouTube is, I actually have experience with this. YouTube is investing in the channels. So Vox Media, my company, YouTube invested a bunch for them to start a sports channel for SB Nation. And they went and built a real studio and hired real talent. And
YouTube has Google money. And I calculate YouTube is probably, if you look at just their P&L, they're probably losing $1 million a day.
And they can afford it.
But it's not a money-making business.
Adam, what I'm saying is that even on YouTube, there is a push for higher quality to validate the model. Because if you just have kitty videos and dogs on skateboards, you're never going to be able to try to make money. So YouTube is, they're trying to solve their chicken and egg problem.
Right. Well, give me one example.
Of what now?
Anything. Of anything on YouTube that's good. Give me a Breaking Bad example from YouTube.
I'm looking at the SB Nation channel on YouTube. And
look at the stuff where,
you have 6.9 million views, 18,000 subscribers. But then I look at the videos, 209 views, 336 views, 2,000 views.
Look at Corridor Digital. They make high value, high production value videos, content that's incredibly sticky, that has a really, really strong loyal following.
Sticky,
and it's sticky. And you,
if it's not really,
you could
sticky,
watch their content and swear that it was actually on broadcast.
This is 98 million views, 1 million subscribers. There's a big difference there. So, but this is something that's kind of unique to the internet, is it not? I mean, this is not traditional media, or is it? Look at 1.9 million views on this.
There's another very inherent problem, and unfortunately it comes back to what I was talking about before, but in television we have a long established history of something called Nielsen ratings. And Nielsen ratings is based on a percentage. It's an agreed to standard, essentially. And we have something similar to that on the internet. I would say ComScore probably comes the closest. And these things really aren't representative unless you have a industry-wide agreed-to standards, all kinds of competing standards. And even for Twit, you probably use PodTrack or something like that. If anyone really says they know exactly how many people are watching in any medium, they're full of crap. And the internet is just, it really isn't measurable.
Well, it's a little less full of crap.
Kinds of problems
that, it's a little less full of crap. A little less full of crap than Nielsen's, which are just kind of estimates, right?
Why? I totally disagree. I think that, you know, Leo, there are huge companies where, and I know several big media organizations that buy traffic at the end of every single month or right before the board meeting. And, you know, they have names like Web Monopoly and all kinds of obscure brand. You can't even find them if you're looking for them. And you go and buy traffic, you buy clicks, and they may be bots, but they're more likely people sitting in Singapore, jeez, perhaps India, clicking away, following a script. And right, this is known. This online advertising with display ads is going to, it's a house of cards. It will eventually come falling down.
It's funny because people have been saying the same thing about television ratings for years because it's fairly bogus as well.
Right,
and the dirty little secret is nobody wants to admit it, and we all kind of conspire and go along with it.
But there's a lot more history, a lot more infrastructure built up around that.
I guess. I don't know if it's more accurate. Let's take a break. Come back with more. We just have a few more minutes with Adam Curry of agendashow.com.
No agenda show.
Oh, there is no agenda. Noagendashow.com.
Be careful now.
I know.
Don't make me pull the gun.
No, okay. We're going to talk about the gun when we come back. He's got a new weapon for us.
Yes, show and tell.
Show and tell time. Mr. Sriracha, Nilay Patel. What do you carry around with you anytime, you know, you eat something, you just got to put a little sriracha sauce on it? Is that
no, I was jealous. I wanted a prop like Adam's, and I'm in the office. And I just looked on the table, and there's sriracha.
There it is.
Watch out, man.
And what have you brought us, Mr. Robert Ballasser?
Google Glass.
Oh, he's number 118. That's the lowest number I've seen yet.
Ooh.
Ooh. But this show brought to you by our friends out of New York City, Squarespace.com. It's the best web hosting plus the best content management system to make your website sing. Squarespace.com. I love it when a company does this. You could try it free for 14 days. You don't need a credit card or anything. That means they believe in what they've got. And they know that after you try it for 14 days, you're going to become a Squarespace customer. That's because you get great designs. This is the new Squarespace, completely written from the ground up. One of the things they've done that's great, this new layout engine, is what they call responsive design. So you design one page that works no matter what size the screen is. In fact, every time you put a picture on one of your Squarespace sites, it automatically makes 7 different versions. So if people are on there on an iPad or an iPhone or a 27-inch monitor, it's always going to look great. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to think about it. It just works beautifully. Great connections, too, with all of the major and even some of the minor services like Facebook, Twitter, Google+, LinkedIn, StumbledUpon, Reddit, Twitter, Foursquare. Great commenting system, very powerful. And, yeah, you get statistics, real-time stats. You get more statistics, more information about who's visiting your page and what they're doing than any other site I've seen. It is fantastic. I want you to try it free. Visit squarespace.com. Just click that button that says get started, and you'll be working with Squarespace before you know it. You don't have to be a JavaScript programmer or a CSS, you know, HTML5 developer to use Squarespace. But if you are, by the way, they have code editors with colored syntax, all the stuff that you need to be a great developer. And then
it never goes down.
It never goes down. We cannot bring a Squarespace site down.
Noagendashow.com is hosted on it. It does not go down.
That says a lot, you know. I mean, we bring sites down all the time, never bring down a Squarespace site. And the pricing is amazing. $8 for the basic, but I want you to look at the $16 a month plan where you get unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors, and a custom domain. When you sign up for a annual plan, that means you're going to get your domain name all hooked up. You don't have to think about it. Just a great deal. I want you to take a look at it right now. If you decide to buy, do use our offer code TWIT8, 8 for the month of August, TWIT8, and you'll get 10% off the first purchase, which means you should buy an annual plan because that's where you get the best savings. Squarespace.com. Everything you need to build an amazing website. Use the offer code TWIT8 to save 10% off your first purchase. Peter Thiel sells off the majority of his Facebook's shares. That tells you something, right? The first investor in Facebook. Does it mean anything they're going to hit a billion users in any day now? A billion users?
Half of which are fake.
Well, not half.
Or disused.
But isn't that amazing, Adam? I mean, you at the beginning of the internet revolution, who would have thought that you'd have a billion people?
Well, I'm also very skeptical about the billion number. I think it's probably in the mid 100,000 range.
Really? That low?
100 million range, I'm sorry.
100 million?
Yeah. Sorry.
Even that's a tenth of what they're claiming.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly not believing that number. And it's a horrible metric for them. They're trying to get away from this. They do not want to be measured by how many people there are. You always see them moving away from that. And by the way, the way they calculate what a user means is someone who has interacted on, you know, they have this monthly user number. So if you've clicked on a like button, then you're counted as a user. There's a whole bunch of tricks, and they're really trying to get away from that because the bottom line for them now is money and how their quarter is, and more importantly, how they can predict. You can have, you know, less revenue as long as you predict it. That's what the market always wants. I ran a public company, so I know, you know, what this is about. And again, I think the more users is just more bad news from them because they have not cracked the code, which is what I keep hearing all the analysts talk about, is cracking the code of making all of this display advertising valuable. And they're trying to come up with, you know, the social graph and you know, what are the things you're connected to so they can, you know, know more about you and therefore put a value on you as a... It was funny, I was watching Mark Zuckerberg and... what's her name? Sandy?
Sheryl Sandberg.
Sheryl Sandberg, thank you. They were at Walmart, and it was a company meeting, and someone who listens to No Agenda had actually sent me video of this, which is very foreboding in the Walmart culture. And Zuckerberg was on stage talking about his customers. I'm like, that was the biggest joke ever. Like, yeah, our customers, meaning the users, it's absolutely just not true. So it's not good. Peter Thiel selling his stock is very normal. I mean, this is his business. His business is to invest early and then at the IPO, get out. He didn't sell all of his holdings. But that's a very normal process and very expected. And I think the market reflected that appropriately. It didn't drop like a bombshell, but, you know, intrinsically everyone's seeing the writing on the wall.
And yet, Facebook is meeting right now with Frank Gehry to design the new Facebook headquarters, which will have an entire a forest on the roof, apparently. Here's Mark and Frank smiling and laughing as they look at the new model.
Yeah, that's what you do. It's culture for these companies. That's great. You've got your little twit cave thing.
Yeah, but
with some bricks.
I don't have a nice forest bricks, on the roof. They're good bricks, but I didn't have Frank Gehry design it. That's pretty cool.
I mean, they're still a strong company. They'll still make profit. They'll still be able to
That's
innovate.
I'm sorry, that's not true.
But I mean,
that's just not true.
Even if we say they have only 100 or 200 million users, that's still a lot of
users.
It's a
big number.
Even if we say that we know they don't have a really good mobile strategy because they would have rolled it out by now. We know that they don't have a really good strategy for monetizing the views, but they are making revenue. They are profitable. So to say that it's a failed idea, that's being a bit harsh. It's definitely not worth $100 billion.
The profitability is arguable depending on how you count the numbers. This is a very traditional trick. They lease their infrastructure. They finance that leasing amount. Their cost, you know, of pushing, 10 terabytes a day? That's just for picture sharing. It's incredible what their cost is. I do not think that they are like a product company that sells widgets where actually all of their cost is less than what they're bringing in. I don't think they're profitable in that manner. They have intrinsic value. They have cash on hand. And that, if you just look at the numbers, that puts them at about $7, $8 a share. That would be their actual value.
Wow.
Their
transit costs may not be as high as people think they might be because Facebook is really into the handshake rooms, the friendship rooms that they have in these big colos. So they don't have to transit over massive pipes.
Right? Peering arrangements.
They're inside the same colos as all the other services that share the Facebook data.
There's apps. Of course. Of course there's value to that in the way they've set that up. But it's not free.
It's not free, no. You know,
it's It's $700 million a year before they even went public is what their infrastructure cost. That's a lot of money, and they were financing that.
Yeah. So, well, I'm not going to buy any Facebook stock anytime soon. I think you've convinced me. Even at $7, I'm not buying it.
I think there's the I think Adam's argument about the numbers is very convincing, but I think Facebook is the internet for a lot of people.
It really is.
It is. That's what they go on the internet to do, and they'll be able to figure out how to extract value from that. I mean, people go on the internet to look at Facebook, interact with their friends, and then they go out from Facebook to the world.
It's kind of like AOL, though. AOL was the internet for a while.
You know, it's funny about that.
And like GeoCities, and we've seen this movie before. Yeah. There is no value in that.
When I worked at AOL, I used to hear a lot of grumpy old dudes by the vending machine say things like, Facebook is just us again. How come people don't give us any credit? And they're like, dude, you work at AOL. I'm like... I don't know that parading around saying you had this idea that you were the first Facebook is really going to get you laid in the bar tonight. But, you can try.
At the time, AOL was absolutely – it kicked ass. It was amazing. You had you've got mail, and it was exciting. And then what happened is you had this gateway to this internet thing, which is like, you're outside of the safe zone, the safe area. I remember it all really well. And we had a lot of services like this. When you try to centralize the internet, it does not work. The network sees it as a bug, routes around it.
Oh, I love that.
Witness Twitter's deal with NBC. Everyone routed around all of that.
Got from your ear to God's lips. No, the other way around.
Yeah, but what the internet does prioritize over everything else is data, right? And Facebook is an amazing engine for generating data, raw, direct data from people. And that's where it lives. So you can route around it. The piece AOL never had was people dumping in gigabytes of information. And there's one thing the internet will work to achieve, it's getting that information out. And I don't think Facebook has, as long as Facebook has that card, they're going to be in the driver's seat of how they make money. Because you're not going to get people to leave Facebook and start dumping their photos to share with their entire social networks that don't exist on Google+. Like, that's not happening yet.
That's all fine, but I still don't see a real business model with actual value making more money than you're spending. I just don't see the numbers taking
place. I completely agree with you on that piece of it because they got to figure it out.
Well, that's kind of important.
It is, but I
eventually
think that there's a way. But there's a way. The internet's not going to route around being centralized because that's where the data lives.
And it is this fundamental debate, though, isn't it? Will Facebook figure it out or not? Right? If it comes down to that. Does it not?
Yeah, and everyone keeps saying, they're going to crack the code. Mobile is the place to be.
Right.
Bull crap. They have no code. I just don't see it happening.
You're investing in Mark Zuckerberg's brilliance.
So, Adam, let me ask you this. How do you make money on the internet? Because my business is going to fail because display advertising isn't going to work. Facebook's business, which is radically different, is going to fail.
I'm going to make money on the internet.
How do you make money on the internet? It seems like you have a lot of
I make all my money in real estate.
All right. So Leo is clearly making money. He's figured out the inventory, which is embedded within the programming, which is extremely valid and works. And we've opted for another model, which is value for value. Like, we give everything away. We have no copyrights, no trademarks. If you like it, send us some money.
When you talk about you mean No Agenda, of course.
Yeah, No Agenda Show.
Yeah.
And we have clearly an outstanding product because people support us enough for us to just get by on the donations from the program.
Do you make much money on that, really? Seriously?
No, enough to get by with the Curry and Dvorak
surprisingly, your funding model is a lot like my funding model.
Yeah, the church. You pass
it's,
the basket.
It's not far from it. In fact, it's a combination kind of televangelism. But we are delivering a product that people like.
And so,
you have amazingly engaged and passionate fans. That's very clear.
So let me ask you this, Adam, because this is the question I always want to ask. What would you estimate the value of your personal name and your brand is in raw marketing cost for the show? Because if I'm a kid in college and I just start a podcast that's just as good as your show, I won't get the audience, right? Because
I think that's a red herring. I think that's absolutely – people don't know me anymore. I'm going to be 48 in 2 weeks. You think that people still – People walking around in memory from Headbangers Ball. No.
I don't know. I'm asking
the value. Let me tell you one thing. I do get value from coming on This Week in Tech. This is where people say, oh, this guy's nuts, or Dvorak's a grouch. What? He's doing a show over there. Let me go check it out. Yeah. I'd say 80% of our initial audience came from this show.
Sure. No, I was literally asking. I mean, you estimated zero. I think that's fair. But, I'm wondering how, you know, that model of we're going to give it away, we'll give everything away and people can just pay us if they like it. There's not a lot of certainty.
No, that's different. I'm sorry. It's not exactly the same. It's we're providing a product and we ask people the question, did you obtain value from this? And what do you think the value is? That's different from we're giving it away and send us something if you like it. We're asking that question specifically, and we do provide some very set pieces, like mentioning, thanking people for their donations on each episode, making people executive producers or associate executive producers. It is a model that I think will work for other products that are out there on the internet. It's not the only one, but for sure, display advertising is not the way to go. Embedding the commercial message, which was the original idea behind podcasting. The original idea. People out there still remember, if I burp, that's the Senseo machine. The
original, that's right.
Right? That's the original idea was embed the commercials in the programming, and you can, even with a small audience, make enough money to get by. I'm not saying that we're going to see the days of big companies making hundreds of billions of dollars, but maybe that's just not the future in general.
Okay, so let me ask you, how do I embed the commercials in my editorial, right, on The Verge? Because to me, that sounds like
very, very complicated.
Actually, you do it, though. Wait a minute. You have sponsored posts on The Verge.
No, we do not. Absolutely not. I would quit in a heartbeat.
Well, wait a minute. Let me see. You tell me what this is. I'm going to scroll down and you explain what this is then. Maybe it's not a sponsored post. Right here. What to hear, see, and read. The editor's top picks presented by Starbucks Refreshers Beverage.
So they bought the ad space.
I mean, so that's an ad.
Yeah, it's an ad. I mean, that's like whatever. They bought the tag favorite. Is that an interstitial? You clicked on that.
I clicked the link there, not the link here, I guess.
Yeah.
There we go.
So yeah, they bought a banner ad on that thing, but they didn't say do
got
this.
Got it.
It's right? Not Leo, advertorial. Let me ask you a question. Without hitting your back browser, what ad did you just see that popped up?
That was the Starbucks Refresher ad.
It worked.
Yeah. Well, might have helped because I said it out loud.
Are you going to buy a Starbucks right now?
You know, I already know about Refreshers and they disgust me.
I don't believe in Starbucks. It's a horrible, horrible company.
But to kind of bring it back to where is the money being made, there are most definitely models, but we still have a lot of breaking to do. We've seen the print model is completely obliterated. And I think I know nothing about The Verge. I don't know if you're making money, if you're profitable. I have no idea whatsoever. But I don't know if this type of display advertising is viable long term. I really question that. And unfortunately, with written content, it's very, very complicated.
The parent company, The Verge, Vox Media, is actually quite interesting. What they did with SB Nation and now what they're doing with The Verge
And what they're doing, our third site, Polygon, is launching in a couple months. I mean,
that's the gaming. Is that going to be gaming? Is that it?
That's gaming. Yeah. Right? I mean, look, I don't want to sound like I'm defensive here, but you know, this is what I do. This is my living, and my living is trying to create the best journalism on the web that we can using the tools being native.
And
right?
Somebody has to pay for this journalism.
Right. And it's either we can ask everybody to subscribe to The Verge, which I think is.
But by the way. This is coming from the same guy who said, I want to have, sports for free. Right. But you want to be paid for the great programming you provide. I mean, yeah, you understand kind of where the twist is in that?
But it's all about where the value is coming from, right? For Nilay, his organization creates great content. That's where the value comes from. For Facebook, it's the fact that their users are willing to dump in all this data, which can then be sold to advertisers. That's where the value comes from. For Adam, it's the fact that he's willing to do this wonderful, I don't even know what to call it, orgy of weird things, and people are willing to give money for it. That's where the value comes from.
Now, all I'm saying is, yes, of course there's value, there's money. I just don't think that the businesses based on display advertising have a viable long-term future. Is Facebook making money? Yeah. Will they make a lot of money moving forward? Maybe not. How will this work? You know, this exact same model with editorial sites like The Verge? I don't know. I mean, but I don't, I'm just, my opinion, I don't think it has a long-term viable future. Think something is going to have to change. We see how Kickstarter has changed what people think about products. They want to be in control. They're more than willing, and Leo, you're a big fan of this, to, here's $50, go make the product, and I'll buy the product for $300 from you. That's the future. That's where it's going. People want to be in control of the products they're consuming, and they will pay for it. We just have to figure out, you know, what is the ultimate amount that people are going to pay. If you took away, if you look at the cable cutters, $200 a month, is probably a little bit above average, but it's somewhere between $100 and $200 that people are paying for entertainment. Man, that's a lot of shows you can get for $1.99 an episode once those costs are in line with the amount of people who are willing to pay for that.
But Facebook isn't entirely visual advertising. I mean, a lot of the Facebook business model is the fact that you can build social advertising.
That's
you
get what they enough keep people getting in trouble for
it. And they keep getting in trouble for it, but that's why they keep doing it, because they know that's something that no one else has. What if you, I can I'm, get I'm enough sure of your what, friends to like my product, you'll like my product.
I don't see how you can measure that value or what the value is.
Don't you think? And we're going to end this anyway. We're almost out of time. But
I got to show my gun.
And it's a great topic, which I would love to go into. But don't you think that it is possible that it really, what really matters is the engagement of the audience, the commitment of the audience, and whether it's display advertising or selling producerships. If you have an engaged audience, if you have an audience that loves The Verge or loves No Agenda Show, that they will make it work somehow. I mean, they click on display ads because they want to support The Verge. I mean, I do think that.
Well, that's
really,
not great for the advertiser. The advertiser doesn't want you clicking on ads. They want you to buy their product.
Well, no. People buy products because they like The Verge. They go, okay, if Ford is associated with The Verge, I like Ford because I love The Verge. I do think that there is some value in that. I understand what you're saying, that display ads, there is a model that's brought over that doesn't work.
It's a part of an overall strategy, Leo. Ford doesn't only advertise on Twit. You know,
no,
it's an enhancement, and it's a part of their overall package to reaching a very specific audience.
Precisely, and it's tied very much to how that audience feels about the product they're consuming, whether it's Twitter or The Verge. And that's important, and that's a way maybe that makes display ads more valuable than just a display ad. We're no longer talking a magazine with a full-page ad for Macy's in it. There's something else going on here. And you're brilliant at exploiting that. I mean, No Agenda Show clearly shows how valuable an engaged audience is.
And I don't know how to measure engagement. I know it's an audience that will send money. I don't know what you want to call that engagement.
And I suspect it's the same kind of engagement that drives traffic to advertisers from our shows or The Verge. But anyway, let's see the gun.
Okay. So this is also a collector's item. And by the way, I thought I kind of had the patent on bringing firearms onto This Week in Tech. I'm a little upset.
It turned out that the Kevin Pereira gun was merely one of those soft, what do they call
airsoft.
It? Airsoft. Airsoft things. So it doesn't count.
Okay.
You Placido. Use live ammo, so that's different.
Yes. And this is actually a collector's item. It is a serial number 128, which is why I bought it, because it's actually a really crappy gun. This is the Ruger Zombie Slayer. I don't know if you can see the letters right there.
To fire silver bullets, what makes that a zombie slayer?
What's the caliber?
Yes, no, it actually has green-tipped bullets.
Because zombies hate green.
It's a 380, so it's a very powerful handgun.
Jeez Louise. And
it's an LCPZ, and this is marketed as a gun you need to have for the zombie apocalypse.
I'm running to Austin. The minute I hear about
you
the zombie
you always have a place for a sandwich in Austin, you know?
I love you, Adam Curry. You are just always provocative, always interesting, and noagendashow.com is a great show everybody must listen to.
Thank you so much for having me on again. I really enjoy it.
No, I do too, and you always bring great ideas. I completely disagree with the moon thing, but you know,
it's okay.
We can agree to disagree. thank you for joining us. Thank you to Nilay Patel, who has done, you and The Verge have done such a great job. I really do think it has now become the premier source for technology news, not just gadget news, but really for technology news. And that's a big transformation.
It's going to be sad when our business fades away.
Yeah, I'll miss you.
It's disappointing.
I just wish you the best with that display ad thing.
No, well, it's been great. I mean, I think I don't know how to make money on the internet.
That's not
know
your job. You just, yeah. you know how to make content. That's your job. And you know That's what?
It. You do. You know exactly how to make it. You made money by getting a great job with someone who's willing to pay you. They're you giving go. You yeah. value for value. That's and I congratulate key. You on that. That's great.
That's the key. Yep. Anyway, it's always good to have you, Neil. I appreciate
it. It's always fun to be on the show.
Really great. And of course, Robert Ballister, the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, is going to give us a final unction because we've just pretty much killed it. What is that? We have to week ahead. I forgot the week ahead. Oh, my God. Let's quickly, before we wrap up, Tom, he's back. Tom Merritt is here. Let's see what, this is a big week. Let's see what we've got.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. Monday, August 27th, the Xbox Live Election 2012 Hub goes live on the Xbox. VMworld kicks off in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Tuesday, August 28th, the Jawbone Jambox customers get the option to customize colors of the grill and caps of their Jambox if they weren't sneaked in early. Wednesday, August 29th, Samsung Unpacked happens in Berlin. We're pretty much expecting it to be a new Galaxy Note. And Thursday, August 30th, COMEX kicks off in Singapore. An internet cat video film festival takes place in Seattle. And Steam's Project Greenlight begins. All that and more on Tech News Today this week.
If you care about tech news, thank you, Tom Merritt. You got to watch Tech News Today, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC, Monday through Friday, your daily dose of great, high-quality, high-fiber tech news. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. Another twit is in the can. Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Wow.